Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. I'm Bill Left. That's Wendy Snyder. Kelly Ripa is a no-show again today. Where could Kelly be, Wendy? I'm worried about Kelly Ripa.
Well, in her place, we have someone much more popular, our own Dave Bennett.
Yep.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yes, you are, Dave. You are more popular.
And I hope you're our own now because, you know, Cochran is just casting you aside. Can't fit in the Hawkopedia. Well, yeah, we can.
We find room for you and for Hawkopedia.
You know, it's nice to be wanted.
You are extremely wanted.
We base the whole show around you.
Yep.
I appreciate it. Believe me.
All right. That's all right. Before we get to today's Hawkopedia, let's go back a day. We spoke to you yesterday about this. Andrew Shaw's future, quote unquote, was up for grabs yesterday. We didn't know if he'd be fined. We didn't know if he'd be suspended. This, of course, for a slur during the game the other night, during game four. He got a one-game suspension. He'll be sitting out tonight's game.
That, a very important game.
An extremely important game. But the NHL kind of had to do this, didn't they?
I think they did. I was still surprised when the suspension came down. I didn't think they would. I think when we talked yesterday afternoon, a little before 2 o'clock, which was an hour or two before the suspension came down, I thought they would fine him.
Yeah.
I thought there would be something, but I didn't think he would get suspended. Having said that, I think the reaction to the suspension indicates that the NHL did what most people wanted to see them do.
Yeah.
So
it does seem like public opinion shows they made the right choice.
Yeah.
What do you think? We're all hoping that the Blackhawks win tonight.
I got no hope.
They have to win. When he comes back for games 6 and hopefully game 7, does this alter his style of play at all?
I don't think so. No.
Nor
I don't think
it.
So. I would think that he will probably be a little more selective in late game situations down by a goal in terms of taking a bad penalty there. But I mentioned this to you yesterday that to me that the penalty, when that penalty gets called there with about 2 minutes to go, it didn't look all that different from Friday night with about 4 minutes to go when he scored the game winning goal down in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where you look at those goal mouth scrambles. You look at all the guys converging in the crease, and they're all fighting for the puck, and sticks are flying, and everything's going on down there. And you just it's got to be like easy pickings for the referees.
Any one of those plays, you could either call a penalty or not. It's borderline.
It's like holding or pass interference in football.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think you could call it every time.
Yeah.
Something. You'd find something to call.
Right. Well,
I think if and when Andrew Shaw comes back, when and if we got this tonight, he's going to have a big piece of duct tape over his mouth.
Maybe.
But I don't think he'll play differently. And in fact, the Blackhawks really need him to be the guy he's been. They need him.
Mr. Enthusiasm. To crowd them.
And they need him in front of the net.
Yep.
You know, he's been willing to provide that net front presence.
Right.
And they have to have that.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Well, we're certainly wishing the Blackhawks good luck, not just tonight, but hopefully on Saturday and then on Game 7. It's not impossible.
No.
I know everybody's a little nervous.
Well, I'm going to tell you when we get to the Hawkopedia.
Let's do that now.
It's not impossible.
What is today?
Blackhawks Radio.
720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents...
Bill and Wendy Show.
Chicago.
Hawkopedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
So you have to bleep out that part where it says
the Steve Cochran Show. What he did, it was
did.
Subtle.
We've Bill
we
and got, Wendy Show.
We caught
that was
it.
Good. Since we know the Blackhawks face a 3-1 deficit and they face some long odds to come back and win the series, we thought we should remember that they have been here before. And yes, the Hawks came back and beat the Red Wings in 2013 after trailing 3-1 in that series, but they won Game 7 at home in overtime. A year later, they were down 3-1 to the LA Kings. They lost Game 7 at home in overtime. A more comparable situation occurred in 2011. The defending Stanley Cup champions opened the playoffs by losing at Vancouver 2-0. They were shut out just as this year's Blackhawks were shut out in Game 1 in St. Louis. Then they lost 4-3 and then 3-2 to fall behind 3-0. There's the difference. But they were down 3-1 facing elimination going to Vancouver for Game 5, just as they're down 3-1, facing elimination in St. Louis tonight in Game 5. That time, Duncan Keith scored 2 goals, Marian Hossa scored 2 goals, and Patrick Kane, who had not scored in the first 4 games, got his first goal of the series, while Corey Crawford made 36 saves, and the Blackhawks won 5-0. They scored 2 power play goals and killed off all 4 Vancouver power plays in that game. That got them back home for Game 6, which they won in overtime to send the series back to Vancouver for Game 7. And yeah, they did lose Game 7, but they lost it in overtime to a team which ended up losing Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. So there's a blueprint there for the Blackhawks,
yep.
And that's our Hawkopedia for today.
Outstanding, Dave. Thank you so much.
You have talked us off the ledge.
I hope so.
You have.
I hope so. Seriously. I was kind of on the ledge yesterday morning, and as the day went on, I thought and thought more about it, and knowing how close this series has been, there's a difference of 2 goals mm-hmm. in this series. Now, the only discouraging part of that is that of the 10 goals that St. Louis has scored in the series, they have scored, I believe, 6 of them in the third period or overtime.
Oh, how about that? That's so uncharacteristic of the
Blackhawks. In each of the last 2 games, they've scored 2 goals in the third period.
Yeah.
So the Hawks have to tighten that part of it up.
What's the night they won? Was that Friday night?
That was Friday night.
I am now wearing the bra that I wore Friday night, so mm-hmm. hopefully they will win. I'm wearing my Duncan Keith jersey. I'm not saying sweater. I've changed my screensaver, my mm-hmm. wallpaper to Duncan Keith.
These are all sure telltale signs that the Blackhawks are destined
You've done
to
your part.
I've never had a bumper sticker on my car. I put the Tomahawks on my car this morning. We're going to do it.
I don't think we need any further evidence.
That's all we need.
Yep.
Case dismissed. Dave, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Judge Judy.
It's our friend Dave.
Thanks for taking in a person wandering.
You, sir, are always welcome on our show. There's never a time you're not welcome on the show.
And, Kevin, make a note that after the show we have to change that Hawkopedia from the Steve Cochran Show to the Bill and Wendy Show. Yeah. We'll just record over.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. All right, that's easy.
Because we'll have one Monday.
Yep, we
okay.
will.
All right, we'll see you Monday. Back after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I really have done my part. When I was at the Blackhawks game on Sunday night, I bought I guess it's a bumper sticker.
Did you buy a bumper
decal.
Sticker? Have you ever had one on your car prior to this? Never. I've never had a bumper sticker.
On my very first car, I put an XRT sticker on
Oh,
it.
You did? This was before you
worked
even
at the
got
Loop.
In radio. Yeah. Yeah.
Although I went for an interview at the Loop with the XRT sticker on.
Oh.
And then when I got the job, I took it off. But that was a Mercury Bobcat, and that was like your Ford Pinto.
That car lends itself to a bumper sticker.
Yeah, because the butt of it was so big.
Right. You got to put something on there.
Does this car make my butt look fat? Yeah. Because it has a fat butt.
That's how they marketed that car.
So I needed at least one bumper sticker.
It's the car with junk in the trunk, they'd say.
Absolutely. And it was a hatchback. Go figure that.
How about that?
But I bought it used. It was my first car. And then any other car I've had after that, I've bought new. And I've never put any kind of decal or anything on it. Mm-hmm. Until now, I have the Tomahawks that I bought at the United Center.
See, now I think that's a proud statement that you're making. Usually, I'm not a fan of the bumper sticker, but that one...
Check it out on the way out, because I was deciding whether I should put it on the left side mm-hmm. of the license plate or the right side, because there's really that's the only place to put it.
Sure, of
course. I went right side because I was figuring this out as I was driving yesterday.
The mechanics of it all?
Well, yeah, because if you're looking at a car in front of you, for some reason,
yeah.
I focus on the right side of the car.
Oh,
in the rear end.
I could see that. Sure.
I know you look left to right, but for some reason
your eyes are drawn more to that side. I guess so.
See
yeah.
how everything is a big deal for me?
The bumper sticker I see all the time, and I don't think it's effective, but maybe it is I see people like near me, it'll say, ask me about my honor roll student. And I can't see a situation where if we were stopped next to each other at the light, I would make the signal, roll down your window, and then I'd say, I understand from reading your car... They have an honor roll student. I would like to know more about them. Please tell me more.
Our high school just says proud of our
I've seen that
LTHS
one too.
Honor student. And I told Michael when he made the honor roll for the first time, I took a picture of it. the decal, the bumper sticker.
Yeah.
I put it up on Facebook, but I said, I'm sorry, as proud as I am of you and as much as I love you, this is not going on the car.
Yeah.
He was cool with that.
It takes, I don't know what it takes to make that decision that you're going to put them on your car. You've seen cars, I'm sure you've seen cars that have a half a dozen or eight or ten of them.
Smart kids.
Well, not necessarily for having honor roll students, but they'll just put, you know, their favorite band name. They'll put some, you know, some political statement, you know, that they're still hoping that that Kasich is the winner, so that'll be on the car. So there's like just a myriad of little fun facts on the back of their car.
John Kerry 04.
Right, it'll say that.
I just saw one the other day with that. Seriously. I mean,
John Kerry sticker? You got to take those off now.
I saw someone last week with the Tommy Bartlett Water Show, because you'd go there and there's a dude in the lot just sticking it on your car.
Well, that one, and is it Wall Drugs? Do you know what Wall Drugs is? It's somewhere in the middle of the country. And I think Wall Drugs has gotten in trouble for, I don't know if they do in the Dells too, but they do that. They go from car to car to car and just put it on the back, and you can't do that to people's cars.
I'm pretty sure that would be Mitchell, South Dakota.
It is. That's exactly where it is.
Sure. Yeah. I've been there a couple times. They've got great, great pharmacy there.
Did they put something on your car though, Steve, that you didn't want on there?
No, I don't think so. Stickers? I don't remember that. I know that a lot, they have all kinds of stickers that, I don't know if they put them on your car though.
Oh.
By the Corn Palace.
Yeah.
My mom's sister, aunt.
Yeah.
Eleanor, but we just called her aunt.
Yeah, it's easier.
We save a lot of time in our family. We were at the Tommy Bartlett Water Show in the Wisconsin Dells, and she had a Buick Century, burgundy with a white vinyl top.
Nice ride, as the kids say.
It was back then.
Yep.
And some dude walks up to put, he had pulled off the backing of the bumper sticker, and she was kind of standing there watching this guy put it on other people's cars. So he's approaching her car, and she just stayed there, and she was tiny. She was probably, I don't know, 5 foot, even maybe even 4'11".
Yeah.
And she just stood there with her arms crossed and said, if you think you are going to put that on my car. And he just went, hey, how's it going, lady? And went to put it on. And she said, did you hear me? She would not stop yelling at him until he walked away.
I don't blame her. You can't deface somebody's property that way.
Aunt is not going down with the Tommy Bartlett Water Show on the Buick Century.
There was a time where you'd see people where it was just a simple, it would say the letter I and then a heart and then the word my, and then there would be a picture of a dog, usually a schnauzer for some weird reason. Schnauzer owners far more proud of their animals than any other dog owner. But you would see that in a parking lot.
Yeah.
Well, that guy has a schnauzer and he's very happy about it, I guess.
And they're so hard to get off.
They are impossible to get off, aren't they?
This one, the tomahawks, I have decided as of this morning when I put it on, that's my next tattoo.
Yeah? Are you going to get that?
I love the tomahawks. I just don't know where to get it.
Get it on the same place of your body as it is on your car. I think you get a tax deduction.
That would be my right cheek.
Yeah, do it there. I'm pretty sure you get it for next year. It's too late this year, but you get a tax deduction, I think, if it's in the same place as on your car. I'm pretty sure.
Why aren't you my accountant? Because I'd be audited every minute.
The IRS is like, you have over $3 million in deductions. How is that possible? My account's not very good. All right, boy, do we have a show for you today. Thrilled that you're listening. Jump in at any point, 312-981-7200. It's us, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Blow up your TV. Throw away your paper. Go to the country. Build you a home.
Are you going to the country?
Yeah, I want to visit the country. I have to go somewhere. I think one of the things that we've established here on the show over the past couple of years is when it comes to things having anything to do with technology, I'm probably the worst person on the planet. I just, my brain just doesn't understand it. It doesn't work for me. I can't make anything electronic work. My phone is a great example. There's not a day that goes by that somebody says, well, just do this on your phone. And I either didn't know my phone did that, or I don't know how to do it.
We couldn't get the speakerphone to work.
I still
don't
know
how. How do you not know how to do the speakerphone?
I have no idea how to make my phone a speakerphone. I have no idea. I mentioned the other day on my television, which I've had for about 10 years, I started getting this, like these lines that were not quite what the picture should be. It was like a...
Like a black line?
No, it didn't start out as a black line. It started out like it's what the regular picture would be, but it looked like you were looking at it through a prism almost. It was three columns that were the picture, but like a prismed version of it.
Like Cinemax before you pay for it.
Yeah, like that
so
exactly.
So it was pixelated. It's you have a burnt out pixel.
I get, yeah.
Several of them.
I guess I do. But then that became a black line, and I mentioned to a friend of mine that I've got that. He goes, yeah, once you get the black line,
no
that
fixing
you cannot
it.
Be fixed. It can't be fixed. So I needed to get a new TV, and I hadn't bought a television set in about 10 years, and I know they've made great strides. But there was a time where when you bought a TV, you put it on the TV stand, and you plugged it in, and then miraculously, you had TV. You could watch a show if you wanted to.
Lots happened in the last 10 years. We hadn't bought one for 20 years almost.
So you know what I'm going through.
Yeah, because you were talking about the cute little coaxial cables, the... what is it, the RC jack, that plug that was yellow and red and white? They don't do that anymore.
The old TV had, and I counted them, so I know this is fact, 16 cables that were coming from either my cable box or my DVR player.
16?
Or my 16 of them, exactly 16. And I told you this yesterday. I said, I won't know how to take the old plugs out and put it. I won't know where they go. And you were very smart, and you said, well, put a post-it note on it or a label on it so you know what
like
each cable is for.
Right. If you unplugged video in, you would put a little post-it or masking tape that said video in.
And that's what I did. But the problem is with the new TV, there's only 5 jacks in the back. And I'm not great at math, but I know you can't put 16 cables into 5 jacks because you'll get electrocuted.
Can I tell you what's happened, though, is those 3 RCA plugs that you used that were yellow, red, and white have now been combined into one HDMI cable.
I know that now. I didn't know that yesterday. I made several phone calls to my cable provider saying, help me, whatever it takes, just please help me. So they advised me to get some HDMI cables. I didn't know such a thing existed yesterday, but I got 2 of those. And I did as instructed. I put one in... my Blu-ray player and move that into the television hole. Is that the technical term? I don't know. I put it in my television hole. And then I did another one from my cable
was
box.
Was your television smiling after that?
I got a thank you card from my television
and
set.
And flowers?
Yeah, some nice flowers. We may go out again. And then at the end of all this, when everything was, I thought, plugged in properly, instead of having stereo sound, I had mono sound that sounded like it was coming from a tin can instead of rich, vivacious sound. Only some of the channels looked right. I couldn't get any of the smart features. I was on the phone yesterday, not continuously, but throughout the day, from 5 o'clock yesterday until 11:30 at night, and it still doesn't work. And not only does that TV not work, but they had me use a remote from another TV because I couldn't get my remote to do what it needed. So now that TV is also out of service.
They had to use the remote for their services to use on your remote with their services near your new TV.
Yeah.
Here's my question, because you can't use, you know, another remote for another TV.
Well, you can with the, if you're only talking cable. Like,
not in North Carolina, especially.
In other states, you cannot. Right?
But it just controls the box or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Right.
But I wanted, like, one of my goals yesterday, well, my ultimate goal is to be able to watch TV, which I know that sounds selfish, but when all is said and done, I'd like to be able to just turn it on and then watch a show. But that could be months from now. But I wanted to have all of the services on one remote so I don't have to switch back and
universal
forth like I have
remote.
To do now.
Did you buy one of those?
No, this TV comes with what should be one, or I could use my cable one, but they couldn't make that happen. My conversation with them early on at 5 o'clock started with, could you send somebody by to fix this? And they said, no, sir, we can't just send somebody by. And then at the end of it, at 11:30 last night, it ended with them saying, we're going to send somebody by to see what we can do to help.
You're lucky because it has nothing to do with your service of your cable or whatever it is you have.
I know, but
it's just hooking up the TV and they don't, that's not their problem.
It's not the cable people's problem, but I can't enjoy their service without them helping me a little.
Did you call the TV maker?
No.
Did you look at the book? Because you can also program codes, universal codes, depending on what brand your TV is and your receiver. Do you have a receiver? Oh, God.
Maybe.
I mean, the last few TVs I've purchased, if I had issues, you know, you just call the TV maker, and they've got helplines.
Oh, is that right?
They walked me through it several times. Yeah.
Now, I know yesterday, like I said, I was done with this at 11:30 at night. I know that they probably close at 5 o'clock, wouldn't they?
24 hours, I'm sure.
Are they really? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'll try them today.
I mean, I don't know the brand of your TV, but that's why I went to the little guys, because they just handled all that for me.
Yeah. It's a Philco.
They still make those.
Do they still make
Philco? Phillips, I guess.
Do they?
Not Philco. Did Phillips, Philco have a baby?
Yeah. Yeah. I just felt so helpless. And my family just, you know what they do is they pass by the room that I'm in. And there's stuff everywhere in the room now. Like you, I remember, like I said, in the old days, all you had, you took the TV out of the box, you plugged it in, bing, television. There's stuff.
They weren't smart TVs then. You just plugged them into the wall.
See, now that's a phrase that we need to do away with, that smart TV thing. Because I proved yesterday that there's nothing smart about it. Or maybe it's just me. It's probably
smart
just me.
TV,
dumb guy
dumb
owning
operator.
TV. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Judy has some help for you. Poor Bill.
Yeah.
Poor Bill, huh?
First world problems.
Hi, it's Judy.
Hey, Judy.
Is this Bill, the Time Life operator, Judy?
Yeah, one of them. No, this is the one that called you last year about the Stanley Cup.
Oh.
And I have the, I just had installed that X1 box.
I don't know what that is.
That's
what
Xfinity?
Is that?
Okay, it's the remote that you talk to.
Oh.
Oh. And, you should get that.
And then a blind person can listen to on demand, and then when you put it has a voice over on it.
Yeah.
And you hit the letter A twice, and it'll say voice prompt is on. And press down or up to make selection, right or left for categories.
Okay, and so I take it you're blind, Judy?
Yeah, I was blind.
That is unbelievable that they've come up to that. So, you know, as we viewing people, seeing people can actually look at the TV guide and what's on.
Right.
It speaks it to you.
Oh yeah, cause, and then it tells you if you have to pay for the program, it'll say how much it is.
Oh, that's a miracle.
And I even have a number, like if you need it for, you know, like if you guys wanted. I know they did say. For installation, if you had to have it installed, it's $50.
Yeah.
But they did. But if you're disabled, they don't charge you because we can't install a box. So I had to get my bill corrected because they overcharged
me.
So I had to get that, you know, fixed up. But
overall, this makes everything. This makes so much easier for you, doesn't it? I can't believe it.
Yeah, and then if you press, like, a guide, it'll say Law and Order Special Victims Unit. 45 minutes left.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Awesome. Judy, if Bill picks you up, can you go to his house
Please
and bring your
me.
X1 and then talk his TV into working?
Please.
he'd have to install it. I think you guys would like it because and then there's a button on the remote. It says speaker.
Uh-huh.
And you just go it goes beep and then you press it and then you just say TNT and it'll go right to TNT.
And then you just listen to the program, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you don't want the voice on, because the only trouble with the voice is louder than the TV.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to turn the whole thing, the volume down, so you can hear the voice, you know, better. But then once you're through, it's fine. You know, it's fine because and then, like, if you don't know what you want to watch, let's just say you say Westerns.
Yeah.
So then it'll pull up a whole bunch of Westerns, like, it'll say Matt Dillon, 180 episodes.
Nice.
Bill would like that.
If James Arness is in, I'm in.
Yeah, I like him, too. And then
wow.
True, like, True Grit.
Well,
this
awesome.
Sounds like a miracle.
Judy, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jude.
We have to run and hit a commercial break, but happy listening to you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, let's go Hawks.
Yes.
Yeah. No kidding.
Take care, Jude. Thank
There's
you.
There's no turning back.
Nope, not anymore.
Thank you, Jude.
All right, a quick break, and then a lot more show coming next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Things have changed, Bill. And
dramatically.
I hope you can get it worked out.
I need to watch television. I have to. It's important to me.
That's why I'm telling you. You can go get TVs somewhere, but you can also go to a place where they can install
Come by and
it.
Fix it, right. Here, explain this to me really quickly because I can't figure this out. It asked me one time, there's a series of questions and I needed to type in answers.
On
and
the
then
TV
it,
screen?
Yeah. Or so one of them was, it said, which of these is your routers? And then it listed about a dozen different kind of routers. And I don't know what kind of router I have.
Go look at it.
As I had to do that. But one of the options that it offered me... was my neighbor's house.
Like, that's a wireless. Yeah,
they're just picking those up.
Yeah, I mean, if you have like your phone right now, I can pick up all the wireless networks in the area, but you need a password or a key, a web key, to get into it.
Oh,
so
right.
You would pick the one that. Do you know your network name?
Mm-mm.
God, why are you even...
I don't know. How do people know that stuff?
Because you set it up. Like, our, you know, we have our name. That's our network. And then there's a key to get in, which is a password. And I have it written down because we have two networks now in our house because there was a dead spot and we were always going over our data.
Oh, all right.
You... All right.
I like to try to break into my neighbors' networks, guess their passwords.
And I swear to you, Steve, yesterday I said maybe that's an easier option for me. Would I then be steal? I guess I'd be stealing his cable, wouldn't I?
No.
Or would it not? It wouldn't go through?
Not his cable, just his web, just his wireless.
Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
oh, is that right? All right. So that's I could have done that, I guess,
my
right?
My God, how do you get through life?
I don't. I always I need somebody. I always end up paying somebody to do it because I don't understand how it works.
Wherever you got it, you can call the Geek Squad and have them come out and do it.
I guess I could. Yeah.
Do it.
I should do it.
You're having a family member help you.
My cousin's helping me tomorrow. But the Blackhawks game's on tonight.
Tomorrow. Listen to me.
Yeah, I know.
God love him, and if he's a technological wizard.
He
but,
is. He is.
With new smart TVs where you can get on YouTube and Netflix and everything, you have to have your TV hardwired into the router. So either you have to do some installation where it's coming from the basement wherever your router is, or you need another router for this smart TV. It's a total installation.
Right.
I told you that before. I'm going to go buy a TV and plug it in.
They also explained to me, I have an old video game. I have a PlayStation 2, and I have it because it's got a bunch of pinball games on it that I love. So I said to them yesterday, there's not even holes to plug in the PlayStation 2, and then here's what I hear on the other end. And I go, what was that? And she said, PlayStation 2 is like 15 years old, sir. And
you
I go, I know, but I still want to play
you
it.
You could still probably get adapters and stuff and get
oh,
it connected.
Oh, can I? Yeah. All right, good.
Yeah, but I hope your cousin knows. Where are you going to watch the Blackhawks game?
That just occurred to me moments ago. I mean, we've got other TVs that are, you know, smaller in the house, but, you know, the thrill of watching it on the big widescreen TV, which was the plan when I bought the TV yesterday.
Lucky for you, Weideman paints such a pretty picture.
Really, you know, timing is your middle name, isn't it?
No. No,
you
it is
to
not.
Think about that
it
for
is
a
not.
Minute.
It is not. I almost stole my neighbor's middle name because I know what that is. I can't believe, like yesterday, and my family was laughing at me, and rightfully so. I put in over 6 hours of trying to make this thing work, and at the end, I've got tinny sound. I'm only getting a couple of channels. None of the smart TV functions are working.
I feel really bad for you because you brought this up a couple of days ago. On Tuesday, we were talking to Bridget Carey.
Yes.
And you were wondering about a 4K Ultra. Do you need all that stuff? And then you asked my opinion. We were talking about it a little bit, and you said, you know, do you need to go? Can I just go buy it off the shelf somewhere? Or should I go pay more money to get it somewhere else? And I was giving you some arguments of the pros and cons.
You said pay somebody to just come in, which I'm going to end up having to do anyway, I guess.
And look at all the aggravation. And I didn't know you were ready to, like, pull the trigger.
Well, I was doing it, honestly, again, the timing is terrible. I was doing it so that I could watch tonight's game and hopefully Saturday's game in Game 7 on a nice new television set.
What's the TV brand?
Samsung.
Okay, because I have Vizios.
Yeah, I've
and
seen
I'm
those.
Telling you, I just
you can go to Samsung
them.
Too. There's a 1-800 number. I can get it for you off the air.
And they walk you through it because, you know, I think I follow the instructions and everything blows up. And just call them and they'll say, "Hey, dimwit, do
nothing's going to blow up. So don't let him scare you. Nothing is going to blow up." But you just, if it's not connected correctly, you're not going to get proper sound or a great picture.
Right.
And HDMI cables, I mean, there are people that have said, oh, you know, you got to get the best. And there are other people that say, no, just get an HDMI cable. It depends what you want to do. We spent like $120 for our HDMI
on one cable.
But it is like, I don't know if it's copper or what.
You should be made of diamonds for that much money. But $150 just for a cable?
Yeah, but you notice the difference. We got a cheaper one for the Xbox, and we just for a goof tried to hook that up to the TV. The picture's not as sharp. The sound is not as good.
Oh, all right.
I mean,
so pay for it.
Yeah, but you don't have to go top of the line. But what did you pay? $20 for it?
$10 per cable. I need
yeah, but
two
that's
of them.
Not his issue. I mean,
right?
Well,
I don't think that's
sound
it.
Is. He said he's getting sound, but it's tinny.
The sound is awful.
That
it's
could definitely be his
awful
issue.
Sound.
And I know it's not the TV. Bitch. I would have even driven to your house, which would take me 5 days to get there.
Don't do that.
Because our houses couldn't be farther apart.
I know.
Apart.
Don't do that.
I would have totally loved to help you.
It'll work eventually.
Because I would love to just look at you every day and go, you enjoying your TV bill?
As it turns out, instead of the Hawks game, my family and I are going to listen to Fibber, McGee, and Molly on an old radio tonight.
I can just see Wendy, you know, bending over working on the TV. You can see her new tattoo.
Right.
I didn't get it yet, but I am getting the Tomahawks. I just, my big problem now is to decide where.
Let the 10th caller decide.
No.
Come on.
No, this is my deal.
It'll be in feeder.
My
let the 10th caller decide.
Shut up.
All right, we'll take a quick
there
break.
There it is, right next to her HDMI.
Right. A quick break. Steve with the news. More show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Do we have to put out a warning for this segment?
Yeah, I guess.
All right. If you're a younger or older or more sensitive listener, you can still listen. Just make sure your parents aren't around to see this.
Oh, good. Because right? I was going to excuse myself.
No, you can listen.
All right. I was reading the Tribune, the Chicago Tribune, as I like to do. And Heidi Stevens, one of the columnists, was writing about this woman named Sarah Forbes. And she has a book out, Sex in the Museum, My Unlikely Career at New York's Most Provocative Museum. So on the line with us right now is the former curator of the Sex Museum, the Museum of Sex, which I didn't even know existed, Sarah.
Well, you need to come visit us now.
All right, you're in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, for the, in 2002, the Museum of Sex opened. And
where
you know,
was
museum,
I? 2002.
I don't know. We need to get you to come experience. So it's basically, you know, just like any other museum, there's exhibitions, there's art, there's artifacts, there's history, there's science. But, you know, the subject at hand is sex and sexuality and taking a really, you know, unapologetic, you know, and non-censorship-based conversation towards it.
Are there other such museums in either the United States or the world, Sarah?
There are a couple of erotic museums that exist throughout Europe. There's a couple of institutions, I'd say, in the U.S. that are maybe focusing on, you know, let's say, you know, art, for example. But I think what really sets the Museum of Sex apart is that it's, you know, my background is coming from anthropology with a focus on gender. So it's this really, I guess, multidisciplinary approach and working with academics, working with artists, to have, you know, truly high-level curated museum-quality exhibition.
Sure.
I'm looking at the website, and if you go to curatorofsex.com, you can see some pictures there. One I'm going to mention are just giant balloons that appear to be giant breasts, complete with a nipple, an areola, and
a long line of men wanting to get into that exhibition.
It is a very, very popular installation.
Sure.
So that is actually, it's called Jump for Joy, and it was made by two UK artists. They're called Bompas and Parr. They're doing really exciting projects, and it was a part of an exhibition called Funland. So what it is, it's basically, think of the bouncy house castle of your childhood.
Oh, this is a bouncy house.
It is. So it's a large structure, but inside are these massive breasts of all different shapes, sizes, colors, that you can, as an adult, jump around and have fun in. And so it's about, museums need to adapt and having more interactive experiences to...
How interactive, you know, I'm wondering.
Heaven. They are, you know, we're still a museum.
Okay,
so,
good.
You know, you still need to have your I'm going to a museum hat on. But, you know, education should be an entertaining experience. So
sure.
We have that balance, and we're playful, and I think that's when you learn the most.
It's kind of standard throughout the rest of the world, Sarah, with museums, especially here in Chicago, that schools will take field trips to these museums. Is that the case with the Museum of Sex? Are schools taking field trips there, or is that not a good idea?
Well, actually, so the Museum of Sex is it's an 18-plus institution.
Oh, it is. Okay.
So only college kids.
You know,
yeah,
so... But it does. You know, there's a lot of professors that are, you know, part of their assignment is sending their students to the Museum of Sex. You know, I've been able to give some of those students tours, whether they be from gender studies courses, museum studies courses, science courses. But it is, you know, it is recognizing that, you know, some of their content is very graphic and that it, you know, is intended for it, really an adult audience.
Yep.
Well, you know, a lot of people have hang-ups about sex. When I was growing up, my mom never talked to us about sex. I mean, it was like, you know, oh, my mom told me when people got fat, that's when God wanted them to have a baby. So I thought overweight people were, mm-hmm. that God loved them and wanted them to have a baby. It wasn't until my friend Linny told me how it really happened. So we have had hang-ups about sex. I don't know that we should. Are there hands-on exhibits or are they more hands-off? Is your goal to leave there aroused in some way?
I think your goal is to go to a place where you can learn about a topic that is so often either been made taboo or we just haven't been able to access information, or should I say accurate information, you know, learning from, you know, some friend's older brother on the playground about how sex works isn't accurate sex information. So, you know, I think that you'll learn something, you'll have fun with it. Some of the exhibitions, you know, when we say interactive, there's one exhibition that's currently open it's called Splendor in the Grass, and it's all about an interactive camping ground. And in each tent installation, there's a different experience. And some of the experiences are about scent and attraction and sexuality, and some are about temperature, and some are, you know, about, you know, going into this one tent, it's all mirrors, and you can look at yourself, and, you know, sexuality starts with you and your understanding and comfort with your own body. So it's not the kind of interactive you're going to be having sex with another person, but there are other ways to kind of to be interesting and to delve into the topic.
Explain what happened with Jared Leto. For people who don't know, Jared Leto is an accomplished actor, a very, very fine actor. But there's a story about Jared Leto visiting the Museum of Sex.
Yeah, so I have the, you know, really unique job of being the museum's curator for almost 12 years. And so that's what my book, Sex in the Museum, is about. It's about those experiences, everything I learned. And part of that was, you know, many celebrities have come through the museum. And so I was the person who would give them a tour, talk about the exhibitions. You know, Jared Leto was one person who came through who, you know, I had this unbelievable crush on when I was 12 years old, and now have to walk him through a museum.
Are you still crushing, though? Because he's still pretty good looking, man.
I mean, he's a gorgeous human being. But, it, you know, how you think about things when you're 12 and when you're, like, a professional trying to talk about here, be it, you know, sexual content.
Sure.
You know, I had to put my professional hat on. I've given tours to people like Tommy Lee, who came in. Who was so excited and so interested, and actually,
no, I've, you know, seen him excited,
like hanging on every word that I was saying, because he really just was interested in the topic and learning about it. So, you know, it's this great institution that is, you know, it's accessible for the person who maybe doesn't know a lot about the topic to somebody who's maybe been famous for making a sex tape, and so all of that information is in the book.
Is there like a Kardashian exhibit or a celebrity sex tape exhibit there?
There was one exhibition that was a film survey, and, you know, I was making the curatorial point that, you know, the porn industry has changed, and the people, the new porn stars are actually our celebrities. You know, are the Kardashians, are the Paris Hiltons, are the, you know, the Tommy Lee.
We have
in the past, you know, showcased some of the footage of those pop culture moments.
Sarah, a lot of times there will be something that will go up kind of on the auction block, and you see museums bidding against each other to own some bit of history. Does the Museum of Sex participate in such an auction? Are there any really hard-to-get pieces that you guys are hoping so badly to acquire for the museum?
You know, there's a lot of the museum does have a permanent collection of over 15,000 artifacts, a research library, a media archive, and most of those things come to the museum via donation.
Oh, yeah.
With content in this space, there aren't as many auction houses that do. There's a couple that will have these things come up, but it speaks to that larger discomfort that we've had with the subject matter, which is, you know, it's drastically impacted saving these kinds of artifacts. So a lot of my work has been getting these phone calls. Grandpa passed away. We're mm-hmm. going through his belongings, and we found...
Oh, my God. How embarrassing.
But amazing at the same time. I mean, these are the artifacts of our humanity. These are, and these are the things that people haven't necessarily always saved, or maybe they've been ashamed of. And this gives us a huge insight into how people have lived and thought and what they've believed in this beautifully intimate way.
I know, you know, bottom line is sex is fun, pretty much, end of story. And a lot of people have hang-ups about it. I know Amy Schumer's doing a great job saying, you know what, go ahead. We women can enjoy sex as well. So I find this very fascinating, although I still feel like a 10-year-old girl where I'm, like, embarrassed we're mm-hmm. talking about this. But there are some great exhibits, like,
go on.
You can't say it either.
For instance,
there are so many puns that I want to say that I'm really self-editing myself. But anyway, there's an exhibit on contraception. That, I think, is very important to learn about, isn't that?
Of course. There's sex is really the biggest topic that a museum could ever hope to cover. You could be talking about contraceptive history. And so on display are various items that people have used throughout the centuries. You can access it. You can talk about all the artists who have made, you know, Picasso's famous for making, you know, highly erotic pieces, things that we don't even see at most museums. They're too taboo. So it's this opportunity to show the things that, that are part of, you know, real lived experience.
Sarah, if you had to pick just one or two quick names of who's been the biggest innovator for sex in our lifetime, who would that name or names be?
She's not going to say you.
It won't be me. I've accepted the fact that it's not going to be me. But if it's not going to be me, give me a name or two.
You know, I think it's whoever can contribute to a conversation that is, you know, it's okay. Sex can be funny and you can laugh, but also that we can just be more communicative with each other.
Right.
So I think there's people... It's almost like the unsung people who are, you know, contributing and through all different fields, research, through creating art pieces, to make this a much more normal topic of conversation.
Maybe Masters and Johnson, maybe Hugh Hefner, maybe Erica Jong,
yeah.
Any of those people maybe?
Alfred Kinsey.
Kinsey.
You know, there's some wonderful, you know, researchers.
How into this are you, Bill?
I did my research.
Yeah,
I knew Sarah was coming on.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you, Sarah.
I'm very proud of you.
Bill left.
Yeah, me. I'd be in the top 10 probably.
Now you will.
Well, Sarah, the book sounds so exciting. Sex in the Museum, My Unlikely Career at New York's Most Provocative Museum, and a great website, curatorofsex.com, will have more information. Thanks, Sarah. We appreciate the time today.
It was wonderful to chat with you guys.
Thanks so much.
And when I'm in New York, my nephew lives there. I'm going to see if he's looked at this. But I would definitely want to check it out. So thank you very much.
That's not strange at all. All right. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you,
guys. Take care.
He's an adult. He's 20. He lives there
I'm not worried about him. I'm worried about you.
No, he can go by himself. I'm not going with him.
All right. That's better.
Here, nephew, look at this. Look at the big boobs you can bounce around in. No.
That's what I mean. All right, we'll take a quick break. There's more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
We were talking to Sarah Forbes from the Museum of Sex. I wasn't saying I was going to go there with my nephew. He lives there. He's an adult. He can go there and check it out and let Aunt Wendy know.
What's wrong with a boy and his aunt visiting a sex museum? Come on.
There's interesting exhibits, though. I worked at Brookfield Zoo for many years, and a lot of people would giggle when I was giving tours on the railroad train or the motor safari mm-hmm. when the two humped camels would be two humping camels.
Yep, that happens. That happens.
It makes me uncomfortable to watch animals, and there's an exhibit at this museum of a threesome with some deer.
Oh, I've always wanted to see that. My favorite moment of the interview is when you asked the former curator of the Sex Museum if there were any hands-on exhibits. I thought that was really a highlight.
I noticed the sign they have hanging up there. Please do not touch, lick, stroke, or mount the exhibits.
I saw that.
So it's good to know there's a warning.
Yeah. It doesn't say that at the Field Museum, does it? I don't remember seeing that ever.
No, it does not. We can walk through the heart
yes.
at the Museum of Science and Industry, but yes. you can walk through something else
yes.
here.
Yes. All right, a quick break, then Steve with the news, and then our pal Dean Richards joins us. There's a couple of big movies opening up this weekend. See if you want to go see them. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films,
we do.
Then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points.
He is Dean Richards. You can't dispute that. I mean, good luck trying. Hi, Dean.
If they're singing it, that must be true.
It must be true if people are singing
it's
it.
It's as good as an Empire Carpet commercial, as far as I'm concerned. It's as good as
588-2300.
Dean, they could turn the Empire Carpet commercial into a full-length feature film, couldn't they?
Are you kidding me?
Why don't they?
Are you kidding me? A side story for each and every one of the couples who have been befuddled on what to do about floor covering?
Yep.
And that only solved by the Empire Carpet Man who comes into their life.
That'd be a great movie.
They made a movie called Ted and Ted 2. Why couldn't they do it with the Empire Carpet guy?
That's right. Yeah. They could easily do that. Evil villain having something to do with Abyssal Rug Shampoo.
Oh, would that be a great movie?
Would Bob Roarman make an appearance?
Of course.
Because there's already a little cartoon of him, too.
Yeah,
that's right.
He should be in there.
That's right.
He
would be digital, like Jungle Book.
Right. It'd be all blue screen and green
screen. Have you guys seen Jungle Book, by the way? We didn't get a chance last week because I was out of town.
One of my daughters saw it last night and loved it. Didn't like the acting of the kid who played Mowgli, but I know, Dean, that you gave it very favorable reviews.
A plus. I loved it.
My whole family saw it. They went without me. Oh. I was not home from work yet. And my husband had said something that it's really awesome, but he could see where it would be really intense for a younger viewer.
Is that true? Yeah,
I haven't. I thought that also. I mean, the violence level is about the same as any
Walking
other
Dead
animated.
Wow,
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, no, that's violent.
It's about the same as Lion King or a Disney movie. But the difference is,
yes,
because this is all computer generated. It's so realistic. It does seem a little intense. That said, I haven't heard from anybody this week who said they went and saw it and it was too much for them.
Really?
When I talked with director Jon Favreau, I brought that point up with him, and he said it's really sort of in the Disney tradition of the classic movies where they don't really hold anything back. You know, there's plenty of violence. But I think the difference is there's a big difference between the kind of violence that you see on animated movies and something that looks so real.
I'm anxious to see it, Dean. The original Jungle Book was the second movie I ever saw in a theater when I was a kid. It always holds a very special place in my heart, so I'm anxious to see this new revamped version.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
My jaw is still, I've been dragging my jaw on the ground for like 3 weeks.
It's that good. All right, you talked me into it. Dean, news came out today, and I wanted to run this past you, because this is disturbing to me. They put out the rosters for two major film companies, 20th Century Fox and Paramount, and these are the films that they will have out through 2018. Now, for Fox, for 20th Century Fox, that's 22 films. For Paramount, it's 25 films over the next 2+ years. Guess what? Not a single one of those films will be directed by a woman. How is that possible?
It's amazing that there is such an absence of so few women directors getting big opportunities.
Have they pitched something, though? Do we know that?
It doesn't even come down to pitches. It's whoever's producing the movie hires a director, and they're just not hiring women to direct these movies.
They're just not hiring women directors. That's the bottom line of that. I don't know. I honestly don't know what the problem is. There are plenty of really great qualified directors who happen to be women. Why they're not getting the jobs, I don't know.
It's really very confusing.
Yeah.
And then we also got some sad news about now this is a guy whose name you may not be familiar with. His name is Guy Hamilton. He died 93 years old. But Guy Hamilton is considered to be of the guys who have directed James Bond movies. He's one of the innovators. He gave the James Bond movie the style. He did Goldfinger and Diamonds Are Forever, Man with the Golden Gun, Live and Let Die.
Maybe the best James Bond movie. So, I mean, for my money. I mean, these are the first James Bond movies that I saw.
Yeah.
So these are the ones that are special places in my heart. But there is a style that every other James Bond movie that followed, and really James Bond wannabe movies that followed, took these as the template for those. Goldfinger, Diamonds Are Forever, Man with the Golden Gun, Live and Let Die. He also directed movies like Force 10 from Navarone, mm-hmm. and Evil Under the Sun, The Battle of Britain. I mean, he was a very, very accomplished director. Worked in French cinema in the 1930s. Don't I sound like I'm not reading this?
No, you know this off the top of your head.
This is right off the top of my
head. I swear I did not know you were reading it.
I knew about the James Bond movies. I did not know about his, you know, the rest of his filmography, which was really, really quite amazing and really quite influential on other directors through the years. So it's, you know, he hasn't been active in films in a long time. But
And 93. He's 93. Lived a life.
A good,
you know?
Good long life.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
You can see in recent movies, like the ones that Sam Mendes has directed, that the style and the way the films are cut and edited and put together owe so much to those early days, the Guy Hamilton movies that he directed back in the 70s, 60s and 70s.
I think they completely set the template for all the James Bond movies that came later on, with their style, with their sense of humor, with the way that they used music, with the way that most everything was used in those films. So,
you know,
people ask all the time, you know, they don't completely understand what the role of a director is. It's his vision of, you know, what to put on this blank canvas. And what Guy Hamilton put on his blank canvases are things that people copied, are still copying today. So I think it's, a fantastic tribute. Can I give you just one more piece?
Please.
I know you love your sad news.
And, yeah, you have some more sad news?
I think we do have some other sad news. Well, we're not sure exactly. But this could wind up being a really especially disturbing story. The Carver County Sheriff's Office in Minneapolis is investigating a death that took place at Paisley Park, which is the recording studio for Prince. They've been asked, is this Prince? They're not responding. They've been asked, is it not Prince? They're not responding.
And he just had that emergency flight landing.
Exactly a week
correct.
Ago?
Exactly correct.
Oh, no.
Exactly correct. So we don't. You know, I'm not saying that it's Prince, but they have confirmed, and authorities have confirmed, that there was a dead body that was inside of Paisley Park, the recording studio. Crime Lab, a medical examiner, is on the scene right now. Prince was hospitalized last Friday. This is what you're referring to.
Yeah.
They said that it was a bout of flu, had to cancel a couple of shows, had an emergency landing of a plane in Moline, Illinois, but that was really the last that we heard about
this. But do you emergency land a plane because you have a bad flu?
That seemed
suspect to me.
Seemed odd to me as well. So this is something we'll keep an eye on for the rest of the day, but this is something that's going on right now. So
we still, obviously, as Dean pointed out, we don't know exactly what's behind this, but he was, did you just give his age? He's somewhere in his late 50s, correct?
I'd have to look it up, but that would be my guess.
Yeah. But seemingly, up until recently with this this plane landing, seemingly in really good health. He looked fantastic. He looked much younger.
When did you see him last before this?
A couple days ago.
A few days ago.
Yeah, he did.
I saw
him at the United Center.
Was he at the United Center?
3 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
2-3 years ago. And he didn't sing as much as I wanted him to. He had let his background singers sing a lot. And, of course, he was super late for the show. That's kind of signature. But he looked great. He had plenty of energy.
Jamming on the guitar. He is so innovative, man. He really paved the way for some really funky, rocking, great music.
Yeah. Well, one of his proteges, Apollonia, just died a few short months ago, and she wasn't old either. She was in her mid-50s, I think, or early 50s.
Prince is 57, by the way. 57 years old.
Wow. All right. Well, we will certainly keep you up to date on that. We're hoping that it's much better news than that, but we'll find out.
Someone's dead.
Someone seems to be gone. Yeah.
Glad I could really bring everybody up today.
Well, thank you, Dean. Yeah.
Jeez.
So kind of you. All right.
I got to put on my purple wrap and hope for the best.
We will find out what movies are opening this weekend. Dean will give us his opinion on those next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We should have come back with the Prince song controversy because I believe you killed Apollonia. She is still alive. Vanity is who
died. Vanity is no longer with us. Apollonia is still alive.
But if I was Apollonia, I would be worried right now because you are the kiss of death.
Lisa is still doing fine, by the way. She's fine.
What about the rest of the cult jam?
They're not doing as well as I had hoped, Wendy. It's sad.
Hey, Wendy. What, Lisa?
They're fine.
Which Lisa are you talking to?
The second Lisa, right? She was the best.
Always talks to you.
Right. Why is there so much favoritism between the Lisas?
If you just tuned in, of course, we have to mention, Dean mentioned there's some goings-on at Paisley Park. I just want to say, because we're talking about this.
Investigation of somebody's a death that took place at the recording studio of Prince. Nothing has been released as to who it is. There's a lot of speculation since Prince had some health problems last week that there might be something to that. But as soon as we get some absolute confirmation on that, we'll definitely let you know.
He was hospitalized in Moline, wasn't he?
Right,
Dean?
That's where his plane emergency landed in.
Yeah,
there's somebody Moline. Working at the hospital going, okay, this is weird. Prince has just arrived.
Yeah.
How weird would that be in Moline? You'd never expect that. Prince Rogers Nelson, by the way.
His original name.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right.
I still call him that undescribable symbol. Remember when
he didn't have a name
at all?
Yeah.
Just that sort of circle with the arrow.
When he was the artist formerly known as Prince.
Right, exactly.
Yep. All right, Dean, a couple of movies coming out this week. Now, number one of them, and I hope this is good, Tom Hanks' movie, Hologram for a King. I love Tom Hanks. Please tell me this is good.
I love Tom Hanks, too. I'm going to see that actually this afternoon. So I
don't know yet.
I don't even know anything about that movie right now. And I'm not even exactly sure what the premise is.
Did I see a preview for it? Is he sitting in a car with someone? Is that the movie?
Yeah, in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. I love Tom Hanks. I'm with you.
Yeah, and you've interviewed him before, right, Dean?
Many times.
Wouldn't you say, of all the people you've interviewed, he would be way, way, way up there on the list of nicest
about
guys?
Number one. He's about...
Hey, guys, can I interrupt you for just a second?
Yeah, sure. Yes.
I'm talking about Prince.
Yeah.
And this is only by going by TMZ, but they just tweeted out that Prince has died at the age of 57. Now, I mean, it says, and I'm going by TMZ, it says Prince's body was discovered at his Paisley Park compound in Minnesota this morning. You know, and then they went on to talk about his emergency landing. So
it has more to do with the flu, it seems.
Yeah, like I said, you know, we're just getting this right now from TMZ, but they are reporting that Prince has died at the age of 57.
That's shocking. It really is. Even in a year that's been filled with shocking deaths in the world of music.
What is going on?
Dean, you said it the other day that a week hasn't gone by that you haven't written an obituary for somebody.
Literally. That is literally absolutely true. That this has been the most unprecedented year for celebrity deaths. And, you know, some of you may say, oh, it's just TMZ.
Yeah.
TMZ has been unbelievably accurate.
Michael Jackson, didn't they break it with that?
They broke the story of Michael Jackson's death. They sure did.
Yeah.
But you know, they are reporting... It is confirmed that we are getting it from other sources.
Oh, that makes
me sick.
What
other source? Yeah, we do have TMZ saying that Prince's body was discovered at Paisley Park early this morning. Prince Rogers Nelson had made an emergency medical landing April 15th in Moline, Illinois. He did appear at a concert the next day to assure his fans that he was okay.
Yeah.
And told... TMZ that he was simply battling the flu, but he had canceled two shows because of health concerns. So, according to TMZ, we have lost a 7-time Grammy winner, 100 million records sold during his career, an Academy Award winner for Purple Rain in 1985, performed at the Super Bowl in 2007. It's just another layer in this bizarre year of celebrity and mostly musical performers who have died this year.
Is 57 the new 27? It's like all these people are dying so much younger in the music business than they're supposed to be.
Yeah. He appeared, I don't know if either of you got to see this, if any of you got to see this, but there was an episode of The New Girl last year where Prince played himself and really made fun of his image. And, you know, he had a good sense of humor about himself, but you really get to see it at a party at his house in this episode. And Fred Armisen always did a great impression of him.
Oh my God,
on Saturday
yeah.
Night Live, a very shy version of Prince. So tragic news as we find out that Prince has passed away at 57.
Yeah, and his last performance, the performance to which I was referring at the United Center, was in 2014. And, you know, it's when you see legendary performers like that, you know, it's awesome no matter what they do. I remember, you know, seeing Frank Sinatra a year or so before he passed away, and he was forgetting the words.
Yeah.
And he clearly was not on his game. But it was still amazing to see Frank Sinatra. Prince was nowhere like that. I mean, Prince was very much on his game. He just was sharing the stage with backup singers, with other performers, and letting them do a lot of the singing. He did about half of the singing in the show, but, you know, was performing like crazy, was tearing up the guitar, you know, like crazy, an amazingly talented musician that he was. But that was in 2014, appearing. So it was September of 2014, and just did an amazing show. He appeared at some smaller clubs later. I don't remember which ones now, but you know, did some small appearances as he normally did when he came to venues, you know, and did a couple of songs here and there. But that was, I believe that was his last performance in Chicago. I'm pretty sure.
What is so shocking to me is it's just so random. I know his plane just landed in Moline last weekend. It was last weekend,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I heard he had the flu. I didn't expect to hear he was dead a few days later.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, you know, if this TMZ story winds up being true, and as I say, they've been remarkably reliable with their stories regarding these kinds of things. You know, the next big question is what really happened. I mean, was it the flu? Was it something more serious? We've never heard any stories whatsoever about anything untoward regarding Prince's behavior.
Right.
Something that may have, you know, led to a premature death.
Right.
Was it the flu? Was it something else? Those are the questions that I think everyone's going to be asking.
Dean, we don't have a lot of time. I'm just very curious. He came out of the box from a movie standpoint with Purple Rain, which was a huge hit, and then made a follow-up Under the Cherry Moon that was not as big of a hit, but really didn't do much more on screen. I know he did a bit part here and there, but rarely turned back to movies. Why do you think? Because he came out so strong.
I don't think he really needed to, especially, you know, film-wise anyway.
Yeah.
He was incredibly popular on the concert circuit. He was incredible. All of his albums were huge, enormous bestsellers. It's not a genre that in which everybody is especially comfortable, really.
I'm getting some word at a website that I don't know how we can confirm, but MediaMass.com, I don't know what it is, saying that this April 21st, 2016 report of Prince's death is an internet hoax. I sure hope that it is a hoax, but I can't imagine it is.
It would be great if that were the case. The reports that we had earlier when I first came on with you were
yeah.
from pretty reliable sources that a death was being investigated at Paisley Park. So,
I don't believe anything anymore.
Truly, you never know, you know, these kinds of things. But,
God,
if this had just come out of nowhere, that Prince had died. But for about an hour, we were following these reports out of pretty credible sources out of Minneapolis that, there had been a death at Paisley Park, and police were investigating all of that. So I think had we not seen any of that, you know, we might feel differently.
Yeah. Seems pretty credible.
Yeah, we have a report that Prince was epileptic. you know, that may have played a part of, you know, all of this. Honestly, it's just too early to tell. I don't even want to be one of these guys speculating about things
of
that
course.
We're not 100% sure.
But who knows? This MediaMass.net could be just, that's a hoaxer of a hoaxer. You know what I mean? I don't know what to believe. So we'll get confirmation.
Dean, I know it was a somber visit with you today, but...
Movie-wise this weekend, you know, nothing remarkable. I'm going to see that Tom Hanks movie a little bit later on. There's this Kevin Spacey, Michael Shannon film, yeah. Elvis and Nixon, that I'm going to see later today also, that sounds interesting.
Looks good, but didn't they already
honestly,
do that?
Honestly, a fairly unremarkable weekend.
All right.
All right, we lost another one.
Yeah, we earlier, as we were talking to Dean Richards, Dean announced that there were preliminary reports that somebody had died at Paisley Park. That's Prince's compound in Minnesota. And it turned out there was just speculation for a few minutes there, and then several sources, and Kim, you were one of the first to say, sources from all over the place were saying that Prince had died, age 57. Shocking to all of us.
You know, and it started, the year started with David Bowie's passing. There are 11 musicians who died this year. January 10th started it all off. David Bowie, after an 18-month battle with cancer, and he was 69 years of age. We weren't on the air when the news broke, so we had time to digest it. Prince happening while we were here is going to be memorable to me. Because you don't have time to process it.
Of course.
It's one of those things that you'll say, oh, I remember exactly where I was, what I was doing when he died.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that you just kind of will be in your mind forever.
Yeah.
Because, Bill, you had mentioned John Lennon's death was something that really affected you. And I remember it, but it's like it was terrible. It was tragic. You know, a fan, he signs an autograph for Chapman, and then
Mark David Chapman,
and then several hours later he shoots him. The other one that really I cannot forget is Stevie Ray Vaughan, and I was on the air at the Loop radio station when that happened in a helicopter crash after the third night at Alpine Valley. And I just remember that was pre-computer and pre-Twitter and all that, so got a phone call that we're getting reports, play a bunch of Stevie Ray Vaughan songs.
I know. I don't think anyone saw this coming. He seemed to be in fairly decent health. I know, as we mentioned earlier, there was a health scare on either Friday
April
or
15th.
Saturday. Was it Friday? Yeah, Friday.
April 15th, Prince Rogers Nelson had a medical emergency. Bill's referring to this, and we discussed this earlier. It forced his private jet to make an emergency landing here in Illinois in Moline. And I remember reading somewhere, it might have been at ChicagoTribune.com, of one of the emergency doctors who was at the hospital in Moline being a little weirded out that we're working on Prince.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Now, it appeared he had mentioned that it was a bad case of the flu, which sounds weird that you'd land a plane because he has the flu.
Yeah, that seems very extreme, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then he appeared the very next day at a concert to assure his fans that he was okay. His people told TMZ he was battling the flu. That's what they're sticking with. And at the show, I guess Prince told the crowd, and I'm quoting here, wait a few days before you waste any prayers.
Oh.
I'm fine. I'm here. It's happening. And then prior to his most recent appearance on the 16th of April, he had canceled two shows due to health concerns. And today we get the sad and tragic news that in his Paisley Park recording studio, they found his body and dead at 57.
Boy, that's so hard to envision. There was a time where the two guys who seemed to be making the most noise in music were he and Michael Jackson. And there's some parallels, but it's just strange that now, not that many years later, both men are no longer with us. That seems, at the time, if somebody would have said, 10 years from now, you won't have Prince or Michael Jackson, it would be hard to believe.
That still upsets me. That was one of the first things of news I got on Twitter. We weren't at work, and I saw, you know, the Twitter news coming out. Michael Jackson's has died. What?
Mm-hmm.
It was so weird. David Bowie, as I mentioned, died January 10th of this year. January 15th, a musician, Pete Hutlinger, died suddenly at the age of 54 after a stroke. Who's that? Guitarist best known as the lead guitarist for John Denver.
Oh.
So he counts. Dale Buffin Griffin, we mentioned this, January 17th, Mott the Hoople drummer.
Yeah.
Passed away. Glenn Frey, January 17th, of course, Eagles co-founder and a great solo musician himself. Glenn Frey passed away. Paul Kantner died January 28th of this year, co-founder of Jefferson Airplane. He was 74. Glenn Frey, 67. This isn't old enough.
No.
Maurice White, February 4th, founder of Earth, Wind, and Fire. He was 74. Denise Matthews, also known as Vanity, died February 16th.
One of Prince's proteges. She was somebody that he helped her career.
And she struggled with health problems relating to kidneys for years. Yeah. She was 57 and Prince was 57.
Yeah.
Jeez. Frank Sinatra Jr., March 16th. Of course, the legendary son of Frank Sinatra. Fife Dog, March 23rd of this year. He had struggled with diabetes for decades. He received a kidney transplant in 2008, 45 years old. Merle Haggard just passed away April 6th. Of course, a legend in the country music business. Died on his birthday, his 79th birthday, from complications due to pneumonia. And Prince. Emergency personnel called to Prince's Minnesota State after receiving a call that someone was not breathing.
This is just since the first of the year. You had a couple of people, Lemmy from Motorhead, Natalie Cole. There were a few others who all died either
towards the end of last year.
Yeah, in November and December. So, and that's just from the world of music. There have been plenty of other people of note. It just seems like we're bombarded in the last year. I don't remember there ever being a period where so many notable people of some fame all died under, you know, a myriad of circumstances, but it's just, it's always shocking, you know? 57 is just plain out too young to die.
And that makes me worried, being in my 50s.
As you approach that number?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, old people are supposed to die.
Yeah, but
seriously.
But that definition continues to change, doesn't it? Whatever old people is.
I guess.
I keep pushing it more and more and more farther away.
And as the self-proclaimed music mother, you completely wowed me with something. Two Prince facts, actually. A soundtrack that Prince wrote.
Yeah, Prince was responsible for the soundtrack to the original Batman. That's the one with Michael Keaton that Tim Burton directed. Even though Tim Burton has a pretty good working relationship, there's a few musicians that he normally works with. On this one, on this Batman movie, it was Prince who did the soundtrack. So I think if you go back and watch it, you'll be impressed by what he did. I mean, it's no surprise he was a genius with music, but he did a nice job with it. It's usually Danny Elfman usually gets the call on a Tim Burton movie.
Mr. Simpson.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's who I thought did it, but no.
No, it was Prince.
You were right. And then Sinead O'Connor had a hit. God, I loved her too, until she ripped up that picture of the Pope.
On Saturday Night Live?
Yes.
Yeah.
Shame on her. Yeah. She had a song that...
That didn't sound at all like that.
That's not Careless Whisper.
No.
Nothing Compares to You.
That's right.
And you wowed me by saying, didn't Prince write that song?
And he did.
Yes.
Yeah. And I know it for a strange reason. A lot of times in Prince's titles, instead of, if the word two is in there, T-O, he spells it with the number two. Or if the word four is in it, like F-O-R, he spells it with the number four. And the song is Nothing Compares to You, and it's the number
that
two
was
in the letter
tip
U.
Off.
That's how I first noticed it. It's like, wow, that's weird that she also does that, because Prince does that. And I remember reading up on it and finding out it was Prince who wrote that song.
And then who else covered it that you told me?
Chris Cornell of Soundgarden also covered Nothing. Several artists have. I've never heard his version of it, but I love his voice.
Well, we're going to hear a second of Chris Cornell with a cello. I love this song.
I go out all night and sleep all day since you took your love away. Since you've been gone, I can do whatever I want. See whoever I choose.
That's got a nice sound to it. I've never heard his version of it.
I love him. And Sinead actually won a Grammy doing that song for Best Alternative Performance, but refused to appear on the awards show in protest. She's always protesting something.
Yeah, yeah.
Seriously, Sinead, where are you now?
Usually is upset.
And where's your hair?
Well, maybe that's where she was looking.
Cue ball?
Yeah. right. As a man playing Frank Sinatra once said, yes.
Well, very sad news that broke earlier today. Prince is gone, age of 57, and he really paved the way for some pretty phenomenal music. And I will miss him greatly. I'm sure a lot of you will as well.
No question about it. We'll take a quick break. More show ahead. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right. Prince is dead at the age of 57, and I'm still digesting that. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Shocked.
Considering.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other song that Prince wrote that someone had a hit with was Sheryl Crow, Every Day Has a Winding Road.
Oh, yeah. Winding Road. Totally forgot about that song. You're right.
Yeah.
He was just so innovative, I'm telling you. And as great as his vocals were and his dance moves and his lyrics, he could rock out on that guitar.
Oh, yeah. He was a great guitarist.
But it makes you wonder when a guy has a song. I mean, I guess you're just being generous at some point, but either of those two songs, the Sheryl Crow song or the Sinead O'Connor song, could have been huge hits for him. I wonder what the politics is where he just gives it to somebody else.
Well, I think he recorded them beforehand, and
they didn't release.
I'm sure it's a lot of it has to do with how they publicize the for the record companies.
Yeah. I guess so.
All right. Well, there's more stuff that he wrote and gave to other people. I loved Sheryl Crow. I don't know where she's been lately.
In a movie theater.
Thank you, Dave.
How tall would you say that Prince was, Wendy?
5'2".
It says here, I have a source that lists all things Prince, that lists him at 5'2". Is that possible? Could
yes.
he have been 5'2", really?
Dude, he wore such high platform shoes all the time. I always wondered how he didn't break an ankle while dancing on stage.
I would not have put him at 5'2".
I'm president of the Prince fan club. I did love him.
Yeah.
Rick, what other song did he write?
Yeah, I just remembered he wrote Manic Monday that was made popular by the Bengals.
He did? Mm-hmm. Did he really? I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, I think it was under a synonym or something, but he did write it.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
That's another great song.
Another Manic Monday, yeah. But see, now I can't see him singing this.
No, it's too upbeat for him, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although there is a song, thank you so much, Rick. We appreciate it. There's another song that I forgot he wrote, but I did know from Cyndi Lauper, When You Were Mine. That was his hit.
No,
and
I don't know that song.
She sang that.
Yeah, after it was already a hit for him.
Yeah.
That one's, for some reason, that one's not registering.
I love Cyndi Lauper. I totally remember his version of this too.
Was it as instrumental like this?
It wasn't as electronic like this.
Yeah.
You don't remember this song?
I don't remember this. I don't know why. Top 40?
Yeah, 1985.
Yeah.
I think this is off of She's So Unusual.
Oh, I know that album. I don't know why this one doesn't seem to register with me.
Here's the hook. Maybe you'll know it. I love Cyndi Lauper, but Prince's version might be better.
Yeah.
Alicia Keys, How Come You Don't Call Me, he wrote.
Oh.
He did.
Isn't it interesting that the songs that he wrote that were covered by others are almost exclusively, if not exclusively, by women artists? Every one that we've mentioned so far has been by a woman or women.
That's a good point.
I wonder why that would be.
Well, he did co-write Jungle Love, Owee, Owee, Owee.
I know that song.
Morris Day and the Time, was that it?
Yeah.
You have a little something from Alicia Keys, Kevin?
Yeah, this is her unplugged version of How Come You Don't Call Me.
Have to tell y'all something, a little something like this.
God, she's so good.
You see, I was gonna start singing right there, but you know, I decided that I wanted to badge him a little bit.
All right, I'm done with her talking. When Prince did it...
Did he write that talking part,
no,
too?
She had lived.
She did that her own.
She should have just stuck with the, you know, the lyrics.
Stick to the lyrics.
How Come You Don't Call Me Anymore? It was a B-side on Prince's song, 1999.
Yeah.
And the When You Were Mine, controversy, it was the B-side to that, Prince's version of that.
Uh-huh.
Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back. Strikes Back.
Uh-huh.
When the credits roll, it's Prince. Stevie Nicks, Stand Back. He co-wrote that with Stevie Nicks. I did not
know
that.
No, I wouldn't have guessed that.
It does sound a little like Little Red Corvette, though. Chaka Khan, I Feel For You, 1984. Prince wrote that.
Wow. Very prolific.
Sheila E., The Glamorous Life, remember that?
I remembered he had something to do with it. I couldn't remember that he co-wrote it. I thought he just produced it or something.
MC Hammer, Pray. It was the second single after Can't Touch This.
Yep.
And Love Song by Madonna. These are all songs that Prince wrote that, I'm telling you, that guy was something else.
Yeah.
I did not know about Stand Back, though.
Yeah, that's shocking. Well, again, if you're just tuning in, we received word a little over an hour ago that Prince has died. This is at Paisley Park in Minneapolis. He was 57 years old. There will be tributes to him, I'm guessing, over the next several days. Really an innovative performer, and it's just very sad news. So we will take a quick break.
We have something to give away first.
Oh, we do, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, oddly enough, the Minneapolis-based seafood concept known for its award-winning lobster rolls is opening today in Chicago, and it's called the Genuine Smack Shack, and we have a gift certificate right now for $50 off your next visit. It's grand opening today, 326 North Morgan Street, Smack Shack, Chicago. If you want to stop by and get a lovely lobster roll,
delicious.
What number caller should they be for $50 off their next visit?
Caller 14 right now, 312-981-7200 wins that gift certificate from Smack Shack. Again, caller 14, 312-981-7200. Back after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Cody Morris is 18 years old, and Wendy, he is a bad man.
Shut your mouth.
Talking about Cody Morris, bad, bad man. He committed a crime in Arkansas, and he's being arrested for it.
Let's
he's facing
let this
charges.
Sink in for a minute. A crime in Arkansas can be different than in other states.
Could be. However, I will tell you this about Cody Morris, this bad, bad man. He's being arrested for something that I have done, and I think most people have done. Can I tell you what his crime is?
Yes.
He was at a restaurant in Springdale, Arkansas, and he filled up a cup that was intended for water with a soft drink, and now they're pouncing on him. You're not supposed to do that. It's illegal. It's against the law.
It's not cool.
A McDonald's customer in Arkansas accused of emptying his cup of water and then filling it with soda.
Well, at least he put water in it first.
Is that going to be his defense?
Yeah.
When they send him to a correctional
facility?
The water
tasted funny, so
right.
He, instead of going back.
That's good.
Thank you.
I like that. The water tasted funny, so I needed some lemon lime slice. That's what he'll say.
My inability to use my tongue today is rubbing off on you, by the way.
Slice. He now faces robbery charges, according to Arkansas police.
Seriously?
He stole soda pop.
Oh, God.
The restaurant manager said the suspect was one of three people who asked for water at the drive-thru window in Springdale, Arkansas. The customers then parked. They walked into the store, they dumped out the water, and they poured soda into those cups. The manager spotted the three and then told them to return the soda, which is not correct.
No.
It's already been in their cup. I don't want that back, do you?
Well, they just didn't want him to have it.
I guess so.
They didn't put it back in the machine.
Right. Take that pop out of your mouth and put it back in the machine. Only 18-year-old Cody Morris refused, say the local police. The manager ran out and tried to block Morris's car from leaving. Boy, these guys take soda pop very seriously. But the suspect reportedly drove his vehicle in reverse and then hit the worker twice before speeding away.
Wow.
I think that's worse than stealing pop or soda.
I agree.
Depending on where you are.
A lot of people do that.
All right. In all honesty, at some point you've done this, right? At some point you've gone up to one of those self-service things and they've got 8 or 10 or 12 flavors and you just go, all right.
I did it at a Panera.
Did you?
I was waiting for a takeout order and I asked for a cup of water. And when I got over there, they just handed me a smaller cup than if I would have purchased it.
Right.
And I took some iced tea, some hibiscus iced tea.
You feel bad about that?
Not really.
Not at all?
I spent $50.
See, that's the thing is, in a way, and I'm not condoning thievery, but they're kind of ripping you off, too, because they charge you $1.69 for something that probably costs them 8 cents, maybe 9 or 10 cents.
They're making a profit. That's how they make a profit, and they pay for the cups. When they give you the little tiny water cup,
yeah,
that's not, they're not making money on that one, on the big cup.
What could a big cup cost? Is it
what it costs them?
Yeah, what do you think it costs them for a big cup? Because that's what they always explain to you.
Probably 10 cents.
All right. So look at the markup on that.
That's how they do it. I'd rather, you know, pay a dollar for my drink.
Right.
And not have the sandwiches be like $80.
Right. And I know you could say that about almost anything. I mean, the markup on a car is huge, but you can't say, well, they're ripping me off at a car dealership, so I'm just going to steal the car. I understand that.
They are not making a profit on the fountain soda at all. That's, you know, they buy the syrup, they buy all that stuff.
I disagree. I think they're making a huge, huge
profit.
No.
I mean, I guess I said that wrong. They are not.
You can do this.
I think it's right. They're not paying a lot of money for the, they're probably paying hardly next to nothing for the fountain drinks.
Exactly.
So they're just charging for the cup, which my question is, in a restaurant, you get a glass that they're going to just wash anyway. So why don't they give it to you free? And why do restaurants sometimes give you free refills and sometimes not?
That's a weird thing, too. I don't know why. Restaurants will give you refills on coffee. Not all restaurants, but many of them.
You don't drink coffee.
That's the problem, is why don't they give me a drink that I would like to drink more of or any of?
Although your Shirley Temples do cost more than something that just comes out of the fountain because they have to put a maraschino cherry
yes,
in
they
it.
They do, and a decorative umbrella.
Exactly.
I want a decorative umbrella. Now, my drink of choice is normally club soda, and it runs the gamut depending on where I am. First of all, most places don't know they have club soda on their, you know, they have the machine with 8 or 10 or 12 different kinds of pop. They don't even know that club soda is there.
I don't know that.
It's almost always there. It's just a little silver tab that you hit to get carbonated water.
There's a water button, I know.
There's always a water button, but almost always there's also one that has club soda. And you've seen me in places. I'll say to them, I'll take club soda. We don't have club soda. No, you do. Believe me, you do. You just don't know it. It's there. So, like, across the street, there's a restaurant across the street. So their deal is, if I get a big cup, they charge me $1.80 for club soda. But if I get a small cup, and they told me about this, they go, get the small cup. Then we don't have to charge you. But the difference in there, let's say they're only paying for the cup, okay? The difference between a large cup and a small cup, that's not a difference of $1.80. They're charging me $1.80 if I get a big cup, but zero if I get a small cup.
Well, they don't do inventory on the water cups.
They have to.
I bet they don't.
But even if they don't, the price is way out of line.
So what, do you want to go in there and get the price that they pay for it? Here, sir, that'll be 3 cents.
No, I'm not saying 3 cents, but they're gouging you if they're charging you $1.80 for whatever. It's obviously not costing them a lot if they'll give me a small one for free. But
well, they'll give
you
a small water. They're hoping you are honest, or else they'll arrest you like they did this young kid.
I'll have to go to jail in Arkansas with Cody Morris.
I worked at Brookfield Zoo, and we would get free refills if we brought our own cup.
Yeah.
We would get free refills for like a dime or something,
yeah.
A nickel or a dime. But if, like, I forgot my cup and had to buy a cup, they'd have to charge me full price.
Oh.
Because they're doing inventory on that. John, soda, what a, they're making a lot of money on it, aren't they?
Yeah, so a friend of mine owns a fast food franchise, and he actually told me that the Soda Pop is the one of their largest profit margins.
I bet it's their biggest
that they have, and they said they even get, you know, kickbacks isn't the right word, but you know they get loyalty rewards for promoting that particular brand of soda, whether
do
it's
they?
Pepsi or Coke.
Yeah,
well, yeah, because they don't usually have both. Although those newfangled soda machines, how about those? You can get anything.
The one at Wendy's that has like 180 flavors.
Yeah. Or Noodles and Company.
Yeah, they have them there too. Yeah.
Well, and those machines are all provided by the soda distributor, so the companies don't even buy the machines.
How about that?
So
can I get one for the studio here? Wouldn't you like to do that?
We
can't get water.
Pounds.
I'd like
that. Yeah, one of my favorite things was when they put soda before. I don't drink soda anymore, but when I was drinking soda, when they put the soda machines at the Admirals Club at the airport,
yeah,
so you could just go up and get it yourself,
right,
and not have to wait for the bartender.
How can you not drink soda? And John, I wish I could not drink it, but wasn't that the hardest thing in the world to give up?
Wendy, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous. July 17th, 2014 was the last day I put a sip of Diet Coke in my mouth.
Isn't that
and
something?
I was drinking it. I was drinking 12 32-ounce Diet Cokes a day, easily, on average.
What?
And I went completely cold turkey.
Wow, that's was serious.
I lost like 43 pounds in the process.
Yeah.
So what did you switch to? Just water?
Water, club soda, and milk, and whatever I put in protein shakes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
No, very little carbonated. Club soda is the highest level of carbonation I drink.
I have heard more and more people say when they give up diet soda, they lose weight.
Yeah,
I don't make the connection. I'll drink anything that's carbonated. I do not like flat things.
Yeah.
So carbonated water would even be better for
you?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, Pellegrino or Dancia sparkling water.
Canada Dry.
That lime flavor, Canada Dry. Those are, it's the carbonations. It's the thing that's killing, I should say that. That's killing you, drinking Diet Cokes and stuff like that, are all the chemicals that are used in it and what it's doing to the lining of your stomach and your whole intestines. It's not good.
Well, July 17th, 2016, maybe I'll go with you. I mean, you've been there since 2014, but maybe July 17th will be my quit date. Do you drink alcohol still?
Sure. Not frequently, but I don't. I'm not on hard liquor. I'm not a mixer. It's pretty much just vodka.
That's not hard liquor to you?
Something like that. No mixers.
Oh. Like,
so vodka and soda. So I'll do vodka and club soda, but I won't do Seven and Sevens or Long Island or any of those things.
What about beer?
I love beer. Absolutely.
This is just a little segment called Getting to Know John,
the
listener.
Getting to know John and what he drinks. Absolutely. John, congrats on being able to cut it out. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very
much. Take care.
We'll see ya.
Thank you, John.
When I was doing clubs, when I was doing stand-up clubs.
Is that why you started drinking club soda?
Because I was working in clubs?
Yes.
Yeah. That's why. They would always say, whatever you want to drink all week, just help yourself. Go behind the bar. And there were clubs that... as the week progressed, I'd be drinking more and more pop. And there was one in particular that had this, like, it was Squirt. It was like grapefruit Squirt.
I loved Squirt. They have Diet Squirt, now, too.
I'd be so full by the end of the week. Because I would just, there was a soda
How
gun.
How much did you drink?
I probably put away, like, 16 or 18 ounces every show. I would just keep drinking it and drinking it.
And you don't go to the bathroom in public places?
No.
Didn't you explode on stage?
That was my closer. I would just pop on stage.
Take this, Gallagher.
All right, a quick break, and then more show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. I'm trying to think if this story would have played out different if, and let me quickly recap before I tell you if the story had played out different. There's a kid in Arkansas. His name is Cody Morris. He's 18 years old. He and two friends pull up to a McDonald's. They order their food, and they say, "Give us 3 cups of water." Then they park their car, and they go in the restaurant. They dump out the water, and they fill it with soda pop. And I say soda pop because some people say soda and some people say pop. So
what has happened to our tongues?
I'm not using mine today. So Arkansas police are none too happy about this. They're going to arrest him. Cody Morris is
ridiculous.
Going to the Big House because he stole some soda pop there at the McDonald's. Now, would this have played out differently if instead of doing the drive-through, if they had just ordered inside and he had just calmly said, and a cup, I'll put water in it and then put pop. It's just as bad if he did it that way, but it's not as noticeable,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It might have gone unnoticed.
Right.
Plus, the whole purpose of a drive-through is so you don't have to get out of your
right.
car. So really, he wasted it.
I think so, too.
Randy, you have a comment about this?
Yeah, this is crazy. It's a waste of our judicial system. I mean, I would have hit the guy if I was the manager. So you, unless you know the mentality of the managers that manage these fast food joints, why would you waste the company's time? You
right.
got to appear in court on behalf of your company now. And these guys are 18 years old. I would say, hey, you guys going to pay for that Coke, and then you're going to get your butts out of here.
Yeah.
And that's how I would have did it.
Yep.
Although, how do you make them pay for it? Because they probably would have just said something mean to you and walked out.
I will let them walk out because, you know what, too many people get shot over simple, stupid stuff.
You're right.
I would have just got mellow. I would have salah. I would have got the situation squashed. I would tell everybody, go on back to work. Keep doing what you're doing. Because I've seen people just get a minor situation, get it just blown into a whole nother atmosphere, and then everybody's standing around, how did it happen?
Right,
what
it
happened?
Escalates.
It's
you just got to let it go.
Right.
Yeah. It's just terrible. Plus, it's a waste of time. I hope the judge just throws it out of court.
Yep. Let's hope so. Randy, thank you. Have a great day.
Right.
Take care.
All right, there's another story in the news, although John wants to comment on this, too.
All right.
John, I would say I'd have to agree with you. What is your thought on this?
It's stealing. I mean,
it is stealing.
The same mentality that people have when they go into department stores and shoplift. They think, well, it's a big department store. They can afford it. You know, look at the prices that they're charging. It's still stealing.
And this is at a McDonald's, correct?
It is. Yeah.
Every drink there
McDonald's
is a dollar. Every drink, medium, large, small, every drink is a dollar. You can't afford a dollar.
Well, it's the same thing mentality when people go to the ballpark and you look at the beer prices, $6 for one beer. And you're paying $6 for a six pack. If you don't like the price, then don't buy it.
Yeah, right. Well,
or sneak some in your bra.
You could do that too.
Stealing is stealing, and maybe they're going overboard at a pop. But I guess this is a way of teaching people a lesson.
You're right. It is stealing. Thank you so much, John. He's right.
It is stealing. I mean, I hate to admit it. It is, but it's one of those things where if I'm the manager, I just go over and go, guys, look, you didn't pay for a drink, and you've got a drink. I'm going to keep my eye on you from now on. You get this one for free on the house, but from now on, you got to pay.
I'm going to keep my eye on you.
I'm going to keep my eye on you.
You'd
I'm making
a great
a file.
Sheriff.
I have a dossier on you boys. That's what I would say, because they'd be impressed that I knew the word dossier.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. We have more show to come, including Arianna Huffington. We're going to talk to her at 2:15, and I mean, I check HuffPo every day. That's what the kids say these days.
Not Huffington Post.
She puts me to sleep.
What, Steve?
I'm just kidding. Isn't that what her book is about?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
You thought Steve was ripping on our guest.
No. He does that.
No, not at all.
Well, we will talk to her about the book that's a little different title, I think.
Well, I don't
the
know
Sleep
the,
Revolution.
That's what it is, the Sleep Revolution. Yeah,
not
yeah, yeah.
You put
yeah.
me to sleep. That just, whatever.
Steve, say that to her. I know she'll know that
you're... Oh, Arianna, we go back that. Years, absolutely.
Well, you know, he's got his book club.
Right,
and
I know.
His book podcast, and his Mincing Rascals podcast,
right.
And his travel center.
Right.
He's got it all going on, that's Steve Bertrand, and he's got news coming up next, 720 WGN.
Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder. In about 7 or 8 minutes, Arianna Huffington will be joining us.
Will you stop
Steve,
it, seriously?
Steve, she can hear you. She's
no, but
on
her
hold.
Book, I've been listening to interviews with her. It's about making time to sleep and teaching yourself to sleep. No, it's a really good message. I'm not being mean. I'm following what she says.
All right. But you're not going to...
We don't know that yet. We're not all like book insiders like you are.
Well, you booked her. I thought you knew what she were booked.
You're not going to make sleepy noises when she's done, are you?
No.
Right.
No, but it's a pretty, you know, she's got a lot of science behind it. And
yeah. All right. Well, we will talk to her about that and a myriad of topics. She's one of the most important online publishers of all time. So she'll be on, and maybe Steve will make sleepy noises while she's on. We don't know yet. All right, here's a question I have for you. We've received word, as everybody's, I'm guessing by this point, aware that Prince died earlier today, 57 years old. It's a shock to many of us to lose somebody of his stature so young in life. So here's the question. Do you think that somebody like Prince, a performer, a celebrity, do you think that this adds to their legacy a bit to have died young?
Yes, we've absolutely.
Seen Elvis
it's the
Presley,
James Dean effect.
James Dean, Janis Joplin, John Lennon, Kurt Cobain, Elvis Presley,
Jimi Hendrix,
Michael Jackson. We could name, if we wanted to, we could name 50 or 100
guys.
Amy Winehouse. We could go on and on and on. So
Jim Morrison.
So what does that do? What is it about that, the fact that they died too young, that adds to the legacy, do you think?
Because we don't know what they would have become. I mean, for the likes of Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
She was so amazing. And to just wonder where she would have blossomed after that.
Right.
That's what I'm thinking. And 27 is way younger than 57.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, we talked about this before, like what Elvis would be doing if he was still alive. And I think you said he'd be calling bingo games somewhere.
Probably.
And
yeah.
That would be perfect for him.
Right. There's a lot to that. Because if you stop and think, especially people who are lost to us in their 20s or 30s, you say to yourself, we got a flavor of them, but we didn't really see them at their full potential.
Right. But maybe that was their full potential.
Oh, I guess so.
You know, drugs takes that away from you.
I guess so.
And the likes of Janis and Jimmy and
right.
Amy and Kurt Cobain and everything else.
And Robin Williams and John Belushi and Freddie Prinze and on and on and on and on and on.
How old was Freddie Prinze? He was really young,
he
too.
He was in his 20s.
Jeez, that just blows me away.
He was in his 20s. Well, Belushi's the one, you know, he was starting. John Belushi would have always been one of your better comic actors, but he had taken a couple of dramatic roles. And I remember asking Dan Aykroyd this a couple of years ago, which direction do you think John was headed in? And Dan Aykroyd said, I believe he would have tried to have been a much better dramatic actor. He really enjoyed that and wanted to try some of that. So who knows?
But then you're older and you've had this huge career. Do you really want to work at it now, or do you just want to take funny little bit parts in movies because you don't have to work?
Right.
You're not as hungry for parts.
Right. So for a guy like Prince, who died at 57, certainly still relatively young and with many years ahead of him where he could have performed and done what he wanted
and
to.
And was performing, yeah.
So this just kind of cements, even though he was already a legend, who could not call him a legend, but it takes it a step further, doesn't it?
He wasn't ready to go yet.
That's the thing.
And
yeah.
I have to tell you, I'm just very curious how it happened. I'm dying to know that information. And Steve Bertrand mentioned something to us off the air just as this news was breaking, something about a son he had. And I never remembered any of that. But he did. The baby died 7 days after it was born. And this was in like 80-something.
Yeah.
And he never talked about it. And then on an Oprah Winfrey show, he was giving a tour of Paisley Park,
yeah.
To Oprah and showed him the kids' room. And Oprah's like, I got to tell you, I'm thinking, where's the kid? It's kind of absent here. And he was very vague about it and said, you know, oh, there will be plenty more. So then I'm saddened that he was unable to have a kid.
Yeah.
And it's very weird. Arcata Theater, a great place in St. Charles that I love to go to, Ron Onesti. A weird booking in the Purple Experience is happening tomorrow night, Friday, April 22nd, 8 p.m. It's a tribute to Prince and Purple Rain. This was already booked. Mm. And I know there are tribute bands aplenty, and some of them are great.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to be a weird feeling for this Matt Dr. Fink, original producer and keyboardist for Prince, who's going on with the show tomorrow night.
I want to ask you really quickly, you said you're anxious to find out the cause of death, and I understand that because I know that means a lot to people to find that out, but when I do find that out, I never know what to do with that information. What do you do once you know what the cause of death was?
I just like to know how it happened because I still don't understand how people die. I really don't.
Hmm.
I mean, I get
they
how they
breathing.
Die. I know. I get that. But it's like, I want to know why. And at 57, I guess that I'm in my 50s now, I want to know why. Was it a fluke thing?
Yeah.
Was it an accident?
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
I know that. I'm the same way. But then once you know, it's, you can't do anything differently.
Well, I can put it to rest then.
No, but, you know, we go back to that, to the plane landing in Moline last week. And yeah. It's just weird. It's so unusual.
So there has to be, or more than likely, there has to be some connection, right? Don't you think?
We would think so, because, again, why, if, I mean, if you're heading to Minnesota, Minneapolis, that's what, 2 more hours in the air?
I don't think that long.
Well, I mean,
Steve,
why would you slow down to land,
right,
pick up a transporter, then go to the hospital?
Right.
You know, I mean, just was an
well, it's more serious, obviously, than what he was letting on. But then, as Steve, we discussed, he did a show the next night.
Right,
he said,
I know.
Don't waste your prayers on me yet.
I'm fine, yeah. Huh. Wow. All right. Well, as more details become available, we will certainly share them with you. In a little bit, Arianna Huffington will join us. In a very short bit. So stay where you are, Bill and Wendy, WGN. You almost sang that. I thought you were going to sing that, which would have been great.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't feel like I was. I'm really panicking about the Blackhawks game tonight.
Well, I could understand where somebody would want to panic right now.
And I know that, or should we say panic, since he's now on the first line. They're feeling the same way, I would imagine.
I wonder what today is like for those guys. I mean, they know the obvious, which is you have to win. There's no turning back at this point. There's no wiggle room. You have to win. So I wonder what that does to the psyche on game day, you know?
But we were talking about this before. I am good with my back against the wall. That's when I realize it's the fight or flight thing. I got to do what I got to
sure.
do, and I got to get it done.
A lot of people are like that.
And that gives you the adrenaline and, honestly, the anxiety to put forth your best effort.
Yeah. When you were in school and a term paper was due, didn't you know that that last day or two, that's when you were really going to get to it? The rest of the time was filler time. But when it was when the chips were down at the end, you go, now I have to do it. I have to.
I cannot do something in advance. And I think we were talking about one of your daughters who had a project due and she started working on it and was almost done.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, you should do it right away that night and then you can just sit back and go, oh, my project's not due for 2 weeks. But
right.
I'm
I actually
done.
Say the best works are done by procrastinators.
I bet that's true.
I believe that.
Because there's Adam Grant wrote a book called The Originals, and the idea is that if you stew on it, you know, yeah. you put it off a little bit, and then you're always thinking about, well, maybe this would work or this would work. So if you're mentally, it's in your world, but you don't just get it out of the way, you end up with something better.
That makes such sense. It really does.
Because I am a perfectionist, and I would keep going, God, I don't think I did that right.
Yeah, go back and change it and change it.
So procrastinating is the way to go, and that's what we've...
It's been decided.
Uh-oh.
Did you just hang up on our guest?
No.
Oh, okay.
I hit the wrong button. I was procrastinating, Arianna, and I hit the wrong button. We were talking about procrastinating and putting things off. Did you ever do that? Arianna Huffington on the line with us.
Hi, yes, I did that, absolutely.
You work better if you're under pressure, don't you think?
I don't, actually, because I think your creativity is squashed when you're under pressure. And
that's true.
You know what I'm saying? I think when you bring joy and creativity into what you're doing, I
yep.
think the results are much more impressive.
Arianna, let us give you the proper introduction that you so richly deserve. Appearing at the Francis Parker School on the 28th of this month from 6 to 7 p.m. This is for the Chicago Humanities Festival. ChicagoHumanities.org has your ticket information. Author of the new book, The Sleep Revolution, and an innovator when it comes to electronic media, Arianna Huffington is our guest. Arianna, when a big story breaks, like it broke today, the sad death of Prince, what goes on behind the scenes at Huffington Post? You want to devote as much important space to it as you can, but what goes on behind the scenes when a big, big story like that happens?
Well, obviously, we have both our entertainment section and our front page team getting involved in how to cover the story. And at the Huffington Post, like many online media companies now, covering the story goes way beyond what we are doing on the Huffington Post. It's really how do we cover it in all our platforms, Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter. That is what is so different about modern media.
Modern media is why Huffington Post is so popular right now. Wouldn't you agree to that?
Well, absolutely. I hope we continue to innovate and iterate and never rest on our laurels. That's the key.
Ariana, I know your dad was a journalist. Do you think that in his wildest dreams he could have envisioned that journalism would be what it is today in 2016?
Probably not, but I also think that we probably can't yet fully envision what it's going to be like in 50 years from now, which would have been the equivalent time span. In fact, change, as you know, is dramatically accelerating all around the world. And I'm actually very excited to be coming to Chicago on April 28th.
Yeah, that's the Francis W. Parker School. It's April 28th, as Ariana mentioned, from 6 to 7. It's the Chicago Humanities Festival. Now, we're talking about Huffington Post. I will be honest with you, Bill and I check it each and every day. I check it several times a day. I follow you on Twitter, or Tweeter, as you call it. And it is an amazing tool with blogs and news and everything. But because of you, I'm not getting enough sleep, and I don't feel I'm being as productive as I could be.
Oh, well, that is a very important point you're making, because the reason I wrote the Sleep Revolution is in order to help us establish some boundaries with technology, because even if the Huffington Post did not exist, the truth is that technology will keep invading our lives. And we need to have a clear demarcation line between day and night, and that's the most important a tool that I talk about in the how-to section of the book, is create a transition ritual to your sleep. Because one of the reasons why people don't sleep well or wake up in the middle of the night and can't go back to sleep is because we have not given ourselves a wind-down time, you know, when our brains can actually stop racing. And we can instead prepare ourselves for sleep. I mean, my ritual involves a hot bath, charging my devices outside my bedroom, only reading physical books in bed. Everybody can have a different ritual. But without that ritual, our minds are going to wake us up.
Ariana, we were told growing up that the human body requires 8 hours per night of sleep. Is that realistic in today's day and age?
Well, absolutely. In fact, we now know more than we did when we were growing up, because modern sleep science is exploding. And the universal conclusion is that unless you have a genetic mutation, you can't train yourself. It's in your genes. And that means you can get away with 4 or 5 hours. The vast majority of us, and I mean vast, like 99%, need 7 to 9 hours.
That's so me.
That's you. What is yours? Where are you in the range?
I usually get about 6 hours a night, and that's not enough. I know I need more, and it affects your health. It affects your weight. It affects your love life. It affects everything when you don't get enough sleep.
Well, you know, I would like to give you just a couple of quick scientific data points about what you said. Your weight, for example, if you want to lose weight, it's more important that you sleep enough than that you work out. Because even if you work out, a sleep-deprived body craves sugars and carbs, the very things that put on weight. And if you really only care about your mood and being happy throughout your day and not irritable and cranky, again,
I'm always irritable and cranky.
That's not going to change.
Okay, no, it's going to change. If you prioritize getting at least 7 hours, just 1 hour more sleep, wouldn't it be wonderful?
Yeah.
To approach your life without being irritable or cranky? And if all you care about is getting more sex, listen to this.
That's all I care about.
Okay, 1 hour more sleep, 14% greater likelihood of getting more sex.
How about that?
I'm going to
do the math on that. You should see the smile on Wendy's face, Ariana, ear to ear.
Okay, so Wendy, I want you to please practice these things, and then can you write about it on the Huffington Post?
Sure.
Wouldn't that be something?
Fantastic.
You just got invited to write for the Huffington Post. You have to.
I got to get the book, though. I got to read it, and, you know, it's going to keep me up all night if I have to read it in one night.
No, I promise it's going to put you to sleep, which is a good thing. I consider it a personal victory.
I would love to do something about that. Sleep really is important, and I used to be a very sound sleeper until I had kids. They're teenagers now, but still something changes when you have kids and you're a lighter sleeper because you always think something's going to happen.
Well, how old are your kids now?
13 and 16. I should be able to sleep okay, but no.
Well, no, I think basically your kids are still at home, right?
Yes. Should I kick them out?
So, yeah, get rid of them.
No, on the contrary, they're at home. I mean, mine are no longer at home, so you're more worried when they're not at home. At least if they're at home, if something goes wrong, you would be the first to know. So I think these are all our anxieties as mothers, and I have found that my anxieties as a mother get worse when I'm sleep deprived. So it's a vicious cycle.
It makes sense. Ariana, I know our time with you is limited. I just have to ask you, I love when you're on with Bill Maher. I'm so entertained by that. Please tell me you enjoy doing that, those guest spots with him.
Oh, I love it. I love him. And, you know, he's also a sleep believer, which I love. He gave me a great blurb for the book saying that if you don't get enough sleep, you're going to regret it when you die, and you're going to die sooner.
Oh, he's right. He's absolutely right.
Well, we are going to start sleeping more. 1 hour more a night is going to give me 14% more sex. So I am looking forward to that. We will pick up the new book, The Sleep Revolution. It's Ariana Huffington, and go see her. She will be here on the 28th of April from 6 to 7. It's part of the Chicago Humanities Festival, and if you'd like to find out exactly where she's going to be and what time, chicagohumanities.org, and we can also go to your website as well, correct?
Absolutely, and you can also go to arianahuffington.com, and I will also be speaking at the University of Chicago.
Awesome.
Not bad. Ariana, so nice to talk to you. Continued success.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye. So much. Take
Thank
care.
You.
Ariana Huffington.
I'm getting some.
You look drowsy all of a sudden. I'm looking at your eyes starting to close.
I got no time.
How about that? All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Let's go Hawks.
Let's go Hawks is right. Come on, fellas. Win at least three more in a row.
How many times do you think Shaw has punched himself in the arm today going, darn me.
What's today like for Andrew Shaw, knowing that you will not play in the game? He came off a very emotional day yesterday, certainly with his apology. But what do you think he's doing today?
He's mad at himself and probably feeling ashamed and knowing that he could have helped out the team.
Right.
I'm sure Duncan Keith felt bad when he wasn't in the first game
Without
of the playoffs.
Doubt. Without a doubt. You feel so helpless. It's not like, you know, in other sports, in baseball or football or basketball, you see those guys kind of sitting on the bench. You don't see that in hockey. There's no room on the bench for a guy who's not playing.
Yeah, they stay at home.
They just have to watch at home.
Why don't you invite Andrew Shaw to come watch it on a little mini TV since you can't hook up your new one?
Andrew, if you're listening, you want to watch the game at my place, come on by.
He could hold the tinfoil on the rabbit ears.
That'd be fine. Get a better picture that way. That would be fine. Hollywood, Wendy, as it turns out, Hollywood, the city of Hollywood, California, is in a tizzy.
When is it not?
Well, it is in a huge tizzy right now. This is condition red tizzy in Hollywood because...
Condition or code?
Code red, condition red. Nobody knows who's going to replace Michael Strahan as the host of Kelly and Michael Live. And they'll still call it Kelly and Michael Live because the name has been a huge success for them. But they're trying to figure out who will come in and replace Michael Strahan. Now, I have visited roughly a dozen different websites, and each of them have a list of potential replacements for Michael. And if you don't know the story, it's very, very strange. He got a job in Good Morning America. Apparently, things were not great between he and Kelly Ripa, and nobody informed Kelly that Michael was going to leave the show.
They didn't get along?
Not great. Not too well.
How can they fake it?
I don't know.
Seriously, if I didn't like you, it would be hard to get in here and fake it every day.
You would open the show by saying...
Bill's a jerk.
You would say that at the beginning. Right.
Just bought the website.
Bought the website. You'd post pictures of me being a jerk.
They really don't?
Not real well.
Because that's hard to fake when you're with someone more than you are your own spouses.
I know, but that show has a history. I told you yesterday when the story broke, when it was Regis and Kathy Lee, they did not get along.
But that was part of their charm, and they didn't act like they were best friends.
Right.
Although I didn't figure there was a lot of animosity between them.
I don't know what it was with them. I read an account yesterday of somebody, a former staffer of the show, explaining that as soon as Michael Strahan became more popular than Kelly Ripa, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't see that. I didn't think he was more popular.
How could that have happened?
I don't know. But she said as soon as his popularity eclipsed hers, that created some tension on the set. You know how when we did a focus group and they said Steve is more popular than you and I and Kevin put together, and we were really angry, but then we accepted it. We went, well, sure he is. He's taller than us.
I didn't. I
said he travels more.
Rising tide lifts all boats.
That's what Steve said at the meeting, and we're like, what does that mean?
I told them not to just ask Bertrand's family in the poll.
Right. They should have gotten a bigger focus group.
A little broader.
Right.
Details.
I know. All right. Let me throw some names out. These are people who they're considering. And like I said, if you go to a dozen different sites, as I did, they'll give you a dozen different names. But there's some names that keep popping up over and over, like that of Neil Patrick Harris.
Really?
His name, yeah. He fills in. A lot of these people fill in a lot.
I never watched the show, so I wouldn't know that. He's great.
He does a nice job. Neil Patrick Harris does a nice job.
I'm just trying to picture it with her, though. And I don't know how Michael Strahan became more popular than Kelly Ripa, because women, you know, maybe they think Michael Strahan's cute and everything, but women like Kelly Ripa, too.
No question about that. No question about it. She's good at what she does.
Totally.
She's very likable. It's kind of weird that she hasn't shown up for work since. That's kind of not a good thing.
The show must go on.
Right. Right.
They couldn't have thrown in a guest host for a couple of days.
Well, that's what they're doing, is they had Anna Gasteyer yesterday.
No, but with her.
Oh, with her?
She should have gone.
Except he's still there. So obviously there's tension because he's still there.
That's even weirder.
I know.
She should have just shown up.
Anderson Cooper's name has come up many, many times.
But doesn't he have his own thing going?
He's got a bunch going. Yeah.
Would he want this? He'd be good.
He's got his own show on cable.
It's called Anderson Cooper.
He's on Anderson Cooper Live. Is it Anderson Cooper Live? He's on 60 Minutes. He has his own cartoon show where he and a monkey solve crimes.
That is not true, but I think it is. I was a little distracted by a text from 262 saying for $8 million a year, you can fake liking someone.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't.
For $7 million a year.
I couldn't do it for 50 bucks.
Can I throw this name at you? Now, he was a guest on our show not long ago, and he's charming.
Trevor Noah?
No, it's not Trevor Noah. He's fine. He's got a job. Josh Groban.
He was not on our show.
Yeah, we had Josh Groban on.
We did?
Yeah.
Was I here?
Yep.
Oops.
You don't remember that?
What does he do?
He's a singer.
We talked to him?
Yeah.
What is wrong
just
with
a couple
me?
Of
Kevin
months
doesn't
ago.
Know either.
A couple months ago we
did
had
we talk
Josh Groban
to Josh
on the show.
Groban?
Was I here for that?
Yeah, you guys.
Do you do a fake show?
No, I do a fake show, but Josh Groban was on this show, on the real show. Neither of you remember Josh Groban being on?
I don't think so.
Oh, come on. Do you remember Canhead, the guy who put cans
on
his head?
But
you
don't.
Are you mistaking the two of them?
No, but if you remember Canhead, you got to remember Josh Groban.
Could you check the logs? And I don't recall talking.
Josh Groban was on, and I said
to
him,
"I think he was on Steve Cochran's show, and you heard him on the way in."
Mm-mm. Because I even said to him at the beginning, whatever the date was, I said he was on at the very, very. You know how we don't usually have a guest on at the very beginning of the show. Well, we had him on at the very beginning, and I said to him, let's do it from now on. Every December 6th, you're on at the very beginning of the show.
Check the date, December 6th.
I just made that one up arbitrarily.
He was on, but I think it was before my time on the show.
Before you were born?
Was it before my time?
No, you were here for it.
God,
you were definitely here.
What is wrong with me?
April 3rd, 2014, it's saying.
April 3rd.
That's 2 years ago.
He was.
How am I supposed to remember 2 years ago?
All right.
He was on. He'd be great.
Yeah. Because he's a time traveler. They've never had a time traveler as a co-host with Kelly Ripa.
I'm starting to remember when you said that right at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
That's kind of ringing a bell.
Yeah.
But I don't remember anything you said.
Remember this part? We said to him, and this sounded bad as we were in a, and when I say we,
you,
I mean me.
Okay, good.
I said, I feel weird because I came into this into his career not wanting to like you, but you're extremely likable, and I do like you because I do. I like Josh Groban, but I'm not supposed. I don't think I'm his target audience. Do you remember any of that?
Not really.
You don't remember that? Remember he gave us each a car? He gave me a Montero. You don't remember
no.
that?
You got you and everything.
You got SUV from him.
What was he in town for?
He's a singer. He travels the country singing songs and appearing on shows.
Well, I like him.
All right. So he gets your vote. If Josh Groban needs your vote, he's got your vote. All right. These are just some of the names. We have to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll tell you who else is on the list of possible Michael Strahan replacements over at the Kelly and Michael Show. Stick around. And if you have any suggestions, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We should have Josh Groban on the show sometime.
He's been on the show, Wendy. I'll show you the log.
Will you flush?
I'm filing a grievance. Kevin, could you get the grievance sheets out? I want to sign my name to a grievance. Here's the sad news out of the world of show business. Michael Strahan is leaving the Kelly and Michael Show. He's going to Good Morning America. Kelly's not too happy. She hasn't shown up for work since. But they're going to need to replace at least Michael Strahan and maybe Kelly as well, because you have to have at least one of them on the Kelly and Michael Show.
They will change the name.
I sure hope so. All right, so who should replace him? Well, everybody on the internet is speculating as to who it will be. This name keeps coming up also. Forgive me while I get sick to my stomach. Ryan Seacrest.
That guy has got to go away. He is everywhere.
He is fooling the world, isn't he? I don't understand the weird preoccupation with all things Seacrest. I don't get it.
It's right after Dick Clark died.
It was even before Dick Clark died.
But Dick kind of took him under his wing.
Did.
And then when Dick Clark passed away, it's, you know, Ryan Seacrest is the Dick Clark of today.
I guess he is.
Yeah.
I don't like it. It should not be Ryan Seacrest. Rosie O'Donnell's name keeps surfacing.
No way.
Because why?
Because she's too much. She is too much. She is just too over the top. She's too much. I wouldn't mind her having her own talk show again. She was good at that, but not with Kelly.
Wouldn't you agree that she's at her best when it's just Rosie O'Donnell?
Yeah.
She doesn't play well with others.
Nope.
If you put her in like they tried on The View.
Too much. That's all I can say.
It's very hard. It's very tough.
And I like her.
Yeah, I did too.
I loved her talk show. I thought she did a great job with it.
Didn't she? Yeah.
She was not that great on The View.
Yeah, hard for her to co-host with somebody. Kelly Osbourne's name keeps surfacing as a possible replacement. No, I don't see that either. I don't see that either.
Give her an MTV show.
Zendaya.
I don't know who that is.
She's a singer. She's very young. I think Zendaya. Kevin, is Zendaya about 20 or 21? How old is Zendaya?
It's funny to hear you say that.
Zendaya. I hardly ever say Zendaya, but I did today.
Was she on the show? Our show?
Yeah, she's been on a bunch of times.
So she's a singer?
Yeah, Zendaya.
But why would she be on a talk show then?
She's really pretty. She's very pretty.
Oh, God.
That's all you have to be is pretty. How do you think I got my job?
I'm still wondering.
Jeff Probst, Wendy. Jeff Probst.
He's really good. I watch Survivor. He is really personable. He'd be better than Michael Strahan.
Do you think so? Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't think that's the end all.
But a lot of what this show is, it's banter at the beginning. You know, they're talking about whatever's going on in the world. Can Jeff Probst do that without making somebody eat a bug? Like, my fear is they'd bring on a guest and he would force them to eat bugs all the time. And that's not a good show.
He seems very scripted to me during Survivor. So I don't know about the ad limit. I don't know. I think he's pretty good
like
at the tribal council.
Yeah.
I think he'd be a good choice.
All right. Put a star by his name if they call me and ask me. I'll say, well, Wendy and I decided Jeff Probst is your new host. Do you know who Terry Crews is?
Nope.
Terry Crews is a muscular, muscular man, a former athlete. He's now one of the stars of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, I do know who he is.
He's got my vote so far.
You like Terry Crews? How come, Kevin?
He's just funny and diesel.
He's really funny on that show.
He is, I believe, more muscular than Michael Strahan. If they're giving points for muscles, it's going to be Terry Crews over Kelly Osbourne easily.
He was on Everybody Hates Chris.
Yeah, he was. He was
Old
on
Spice.
That.
He's the Old Spice guy.
In some of their commercials, not in all of them, but in some of them, is he? Wait.
Yeah, you're right. He's like
in some of them.
One of them. Yeah, there's
right?
like two.
Okay,
of them.
There's a couple.
Wow.
There's a couple.
He's got some.
He's a very strong man. He can do that trick with his pectorals that make him go in and out and in and out and in and out. He can do that.
Like you can't.
I can do it. Not on purpose.
Is that on like the application for the job?
Yeah. I know that seems sexist.
A little bit.
They line people up and they make them do that.
Okay, we'll get Zendaya or whatever.
Zendaya
and Terry Crews because she's pretty.
Yeah.
I ask, isn't she a singer? But she's pretty. This is a talk show, isn't it?
Yeah. What about do you know who Sam Champion is?
I know the name.
He's the former weatherman from Good Morning America.
Again, I know the name.
He looks like a cartoon guy would look, like on Johnny Quest. You know the guy, Race Bannon, who hung out with the Quest family? He looks like that guy.
He does look like that guy.
Yeah.
I don't like looking at him.
You don't like looking at Sam Champion? Well, then
is he good, though? I mean, can he...
With weather, I don't know. I mean, if you're only talking about weather, maybe. I don't know. Mark Consuelos.
Isn't that her husband?
That's her husband.
Would be a good idea.
He fills in all the time.
I, while waiting for a car in a dealership, they had them on when they were together. That show was on, and they did a really great job together.
Yeah, well,
he is easy on the eyes.
You know what he used to do?
Yes, he was a soap opera actor.
You know what he did before that?
He used to be my pool boy.
I don't think that's true, is it?
You
just made that up. He was a dancer, a stripper. Did you know that?
I vote for him.
You want him to get right? The contest is closed. We have a winner. Thank you, Ryan Seacrest and Zendaya and Rosie O'Donnell, Neil Patrick Harris and Jeff Probst. But Mark Consuelos, by virtue of the fact that he was a dancer, he will be your new host.
But don't you think that would be a cute little thing to have a husband and wife do it? It does change the dynamic quite a bit. But
right.
I think they worked well together. You could hear a little about their family because we all have families.
Yeah.
I think that might be a good way to go.
Now, I read in the tabloids that when he used to fill in quite often, because before they had Michael Strahan, Mark Consuelos would fill in, that was causing tension at home, that they were together too often, and that was messing with the marriage a little bit. You could see where that would be, because you don't have any downtime. You're at work with your partner. You're at home with your partner. You're doing extra, you know, if you're going out to movies or shows, plays or whatever, so you're always together, that might be too much.
Well, what do we care what happens at home?
I don't want them to get a divorce, Wendy. It's not worth it. And he can't do that thing with his chest where they go in and out and in and out and in and out.
They're not going to do that on the show.
That's a segment on the show.
No, it is not.
They try to teach a guest how to do that.
He wears clothes. He's not topless.
If Terry Crews got the job, that would probably be a segment.
That would be a
show.
Segment.
Well, then he shouldn't get it.
It's time to play our segment.
I disagree.
Wait, we've got a great choice here. Jeff, who do you think should do it?
Pat Tomasulo.
From WGN-TV Morning News.
Didn't he audition before when they were looking for someone?
Yeah, he did it one day or a couple days.
Was he great?
2 years ago.
He wasn't
bad. He was humorous. Yeah.
You know? He can do that thing with his pectorals.
Yeah, he can do that. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I think it's his butt cheeks. I might be confused.
Version. It is.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. All right, a quick break. Ro and Anna coming in next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.